Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Hey, everybody, it's Weenie in the Butt here live at the Quahog Air Show. We're all ready for the Weenie Sound-A-Like Contest.
I don't know, Butt. I don't think they can say my catchphrase because they no funny.
Oh, there it is. And if you think you can say that just like Weenie here, you could win $97.1 for the cool weekend ahead.
Weenie in the Butt. Weenie in the Butt.
Cool weekends in the morning. 97.1 FM.
Cool weekends in the morning with Weenie in the Butt.
WQHG 97.1.
97.1. 97.1. Weenie in the Butt.
In the morning, cool weekends.
FM.
Weenie.
Weenie.
And the Butt.
And welcome back.
Excuse me, I gotta find a lost kid. Can I use your mic?
That's what she said.
Whoa, you got Butt Slam.
Listen, I could really use a hand here.
That's what he said.
Butt Slam!
That's Manic Monkey on 97.1.
Manic Monkey, 97.1.
Cool, weekends in the morning.
Oh, weekend long.
Weenie and the Butt.
In the morning.
On the radio.
Give me that.
Stewie Griffin, will you please report to the radio booth? Stewie Griffin.
Hey, that's quite a voice you've got there. You ever think about doing radio?
Well, I listen to a lot of radio. Peter and Lois leave the radio on when they go out, so I feel like somebody's home.
Well, here's my card. Call me if you're interested.
Hey, okay, we've got our first contestant.
Let's hear Weenie's catchphrase.
Dano funny.
I think we have a wiener. And that's Dickie the Punchline Donkey on 97.1.
Dickie the Punchline Donkey on Cool 97.1.
Cool weekend.
On the radio.
In the
morning.
FM.
Cool.
WQHG.
Cool weekend.
In the morning.
On 97.1.
97.1.
It is 26 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of March of the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us on this Monday.
Monday.
Thank you so much. See, I can, regardless of anything else you ever notice, I can never hate Seth MacFarlane because of that. Because of that section of that episode right there. Because of Weenie in the Butt. For me, the pinnacle, the peak, the apex of that entire thing is the second time when the guy goes, butt slammed! It's as good as it gets. That is comedy with two Ks right there. All right. It is...
But you are known for your childish antics.
That's right, Don.
And your toilet
humor. And my
humor.
Toilet humor. You're the one who talked to me.
I know.
Use the phrase, that guy just spends all his time pooping, or whatever it was you said this morning. I don't even remember. It's all just such a big blur. It's a wash of noise
and
to me.
And none of the people saying bad things about us on Facebook have used my name.
No, it's all me. No, I, for good or bad, however entertaining or offensive somebody might find the show, that all seems to accrue to me.
Yeah.
KPM, I think, is... It looks as though they're attempting to take down some of the Facebook posts from people who are displeased with the tenor and content of the program, but not taking them down fast enough. So Cheryl, God bless her, is capturing those and sending those along, such as Marianne Smith Poole, who says, I have already made two comments in regard to KPAM putting Rick Emerson on the air when children might be listening. The second comment was that this must be an early April Fool's joke. They have deleted both comments. I did not listen this morning, nor will I listen while he is on the show this week.
And if you go to KPAM's Facebook page now, That comment has been deleted as well.
Excellent. Fantastic.
So her comment about them deleting her comments is no longer there. But we have captured it with the joy of the print screen option.
That's fantastic. And I'm going to be sending some of those out as a sort of ongoing Twitter feed throughout the afternoon and the evening.
I do want to share real quickly, though, in result, because I did post a couple of these screen captures to my Facebook page.
Excellent.
And my mother-in-law, of all people, my mother-in-law says, "You and Rick have a unique listening audience that truly enjoys your type of off-the-wall humor, but the general public evidently does not get you to. Probably will have to be more generic for the rest of the week. You can do it!" Lots of exclamation points. Good luck.
See, that's sort of the good news, bad news response right there. When she's supportive, but only because she thinks you can eventually change your ways.
Well, it's a mother-in-law. It's a mom thing, so it's sort of like, well, honey, you know, if you're offending everyone, maybe you might want to tone it down
a
bit.
I mean, really, if everybody seems to find you really off-putting, I mean, maybe that means something. I mean, maybe they're, you know...
We know you have a good heart, but others might not understand your humor.
All right.
Let me give you a hug.
God almighty. Dave Dishman says, "I am tired of Rick Emerson's toilet humor. This is just because I made the observation that it was a little embarrassing to be seen buying. And I have to say, I did, in fact, I was lugging around a 36-count sort of crate of toilet paper around the Safeway last night. And I think I sort of left the comment there. See, and it would be easy for me to put it on you, because then you followed up by going, "Everybody was saying that guy does nothing but poop." But see, here, that would be unfair.
In my wacky morning DJ voice.
Pooping!
In the morning.
And apparently the rest of the time as well. Zam. Oh, we got to stop that. But here's the thing: it's unfair of me to tag you with that, because if you had not interjected like "all that guy does is poop" or whatever, I was going to continue the observation. It would have gone something like this, you know. It would have been. It's hard for me to sort of reenact it, but I would have said, you know, like, "Well, there I am, and so I'm walking around the supermarket, and I'm buying this 36 roll thing of toilet paper, you know." And then it's like, you know, you're always making eye contact with people, and you're seeing some friend, and you know, and. It would have just ended with me going, "And so, you know, there I am, you know, looking at a guy going, 'Yes, that's right, I'm buying a product for my anus,' you know, and it's or whatever, you know," and it would have just, what did I say this morning that you thought I said anus?
I guess you guys were talking about famous
Amos,
and you said, "Don's got some story about meeting Amos," and I just heard like, "blah, blah, 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 Don on anus," and I went, "I have what now?"
When Dawn meets anus. Weekends on... All right. In any event. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to get on board telephonically, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964. That's 503-505-6964. Somebody's offering us $10 if we'll refer to someone being butt-slammed tomorrow on KPAM. No, that's great.
Well, apparently all we have been told is that we shouldn't use the word goddamn. So other than that, sky's the limit, really.
Can I tell you, I was actually sort of, because I do try to follow those directives, you know, if I'm going to be filling in. Because as we said before, it's like I will say for the record, a couple of things for the record. Not that this is much of a problem and not that we anticipate this being an issue. If you do, if you flit over to KPM's Facebook page, there'll be a jackass. If there's something there that's hateful, by all means, save it or capture it or screen cap it. Send it. Don't let that get away. Capture that somehow before they remove it.
But if you're going to leave comments, have them only be of a positive nature. How much you enjoy the Rick Emerson experience. Don't attack the old people because, you know, their ears can't adjust.
Don't say that you were positively butt slammed by our unique take on comedic stylings either. Just be generally positive. But I will say this. All kidding aside, you know, Bob Mueller, you know, I've only ever met him a couple times. Seems like a nice guy. And apparently he's been a fan of the show for quite some time, which is sort of, I think I mentioned during the break that I always sort of imagined, because Dennis Pitzenbarger worked with him, and Pitzenbarger would bring these weird Bob Mueller bobbleheads in, and he would just stack them up at the back of the studio and have them stare at me sometimes. And I would sort of poke fun at Bob Mueller here's the thing about it. The thing I have learned, and that I think other people have sort of learned, is the way to get me to never make fun of you is if I ever meet you in person and you're nice, or if I find out that you're a listener, it's like then I just am physically incapable of ridiculing you. I can never be mean to somebody if I find out that they like the show, or if I just meet them in person and they turn out to be Like even like making fun of Lars, it's like I couldn't quite put the boot into it. Once I met him, once he did that thing about when those jackasses were living in a truck, and he did the thing of being in the truck and, you know, saying, why are you here on a truck? Why aren't you getting a job? You know, and it was like he was such a good sport about it and played along, and I was just never really able to hate on him all that much. It was just the fire just went out of it. But I've always thought that Bob sort of viewed guys like me as just, you know, sort of a lot of energy and well-meaning, but just misguided, you know, that I'd find my way eventually and I'd realize that I didn't need to work in such a crude fashion to make my mark on broadcasting. But,
or it could be one of those things that he genuinely appreciates what you do and finds it really funny and thinks, well, that's not the way I work. But I find that funny.
Right. It's a big world with a lot of different tastes and styles. So because we are hosting, because we are filling in for Bob, and it's not like it's the Rick Emerson Show on KPAM or something, because I think that's a phrase you're probably never going to hear in your life.
No, probably not.
You know, we're filling in for Bob, and so I don't want to be just like staying in somebody's house. It's like a timeshare. I don't want to wreck the joint. So I actually felt self-conscious this morning when I think the first thing out of the gate is I used the phrase, I swear to God. Because I always talk about, you know, there's the joke of like traffic and weather together or whatever. And yeah. I said something like, I swear to God, it's traffic and weather together. And I felt kind of bad about it for a little while. But then later on, you said something that was sort of a variation of that, but kind of worse. You said, oh, for God's sake, or something. And and it was great because like my sins were immediately sort of, they were obliterated.
I can't understand why the KPAM listeners don't love us.
Somebody says, I never really realized how offensive your show was until I was just reading the post from the KPAM listeners. Well, one must see things through a different prism occasionally. It's sort of a freaky Monday kind of a thing. Well, we'll talk more about that here in a few. If you want to get on board, you can do it. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have to share with us. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com, D-A-W-N @rickemerson.com. You can also get us via the text box. And, of course, if you want to Skype, you can do that. It's Rick Emerson Show at Skype, which I meant to have on during the Bob Miller Show this morning. I meant to turn on our Skype, and I just didn't because I kind of, I just kind of got behind. And it was like, it wasn't even like I woke up late. It was that thing of, I did the thing of waking up this morning. You know, the story I didn't get to tell about the famous Amos is that I woke up this morning at 5 because my goal was to be there no later than 6 because we go on at 7. Yeah. I woke up at 5 and it was the thing where I didn't fall back asleep, but I woke up and I dragged my ass down the hallway to my home office and I just sat there. And it wasn't sleeping. It was just that thing of laying in the chair. Like maybe after you've done an exceptionally difficult workout or you've just, or maybe like if you're really hungover. It was a thing of just laying in the chair, not being asleep, but just it being so painful to be awake that I couldn't move. And just sitting in the chair going, oh, it hurts. And the only thing I had the energy to do was just to reach my hand down by the side of the chair to where I had a huge box of Famous Amos cookies. And I just sat. This is how I spent my morning before I went to work at KPAM. I just sat there in the chair in my office going, oh, it burns. And reaching down into a box of chocolate chip cookies. And then reaching back up and shoveling them into my mouth. And then chewing and sort of crying. And then chewing some more and then crying. And then eventually just getting up and like putting on deodorant and getting in the car. That was my morning. And then you had. It was, I swear to God, I for a minute I didn't think you were going to make it in. Because it was like 6:45.
Yeah. I had the thing where I went to bed nice and early, figuring, you know, got to get up at like 4:30 in the morning, because you got to collect the news, do my job. Went to bed, and then Patrick decided he was going to go to bed too. And then he did that thing, which he's been doing ever since he started getting whatever his internal issues are with his liver and whatever. He just twitches and runs in his sleep like a dog chasing rabbits. And he just wouldn't stop. And I'd fall asleep, and then I'd wake up, and he'd be, like, booting me in the back with his knee or something. And so finally, about 1:30 in the morning, I just went, go sleep on the couch! Get out of the bed! I have to get up at 4:30! And I made him go out to the couch. And then finally, you know, got a little bit of sleep, and then got up this morning and did stuff. Yeah, and then my car was acting goofy. It just kept stalling on me. And I did get an email from a listener who is near my and who owns a transmission shop and has offered to, like, not only just offered to work on my car, but offered to, like, pick me up and drive me back to work and stuff. I mean, just
fantastic.
Awesome. But the thing is that we're going for the next 3 days. It's like going to Milwaukee and then coming here. And then, so it's going to take a couple of days. By the way, one of our, the KPAM listeners who dislikes it, cranky old man who doesn't like the toilet humor, Dave Dishman.
Yeah.
Honest to God, when I went to his Facebook information, I was totally not expecting to see sexy, sexy pictures of Greg Louganis and Ricky Martin.
Really?
Yes.
Is Dave a stylish dresser?
Apparently, Dave is a silver senior, who apparently is a fan of Greg Louganis and someone named Sean Harley, who is very muscular and shirtless, and also the chorale group Out for Joy.
Well, maybe this is because I'm too much of a twink. Maybe that's the problem here. Maybe it's...
He also really likes NCIS and Bones. So, but yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant...
Oh, activities and interests, activities that he enjoys, Fleet Week. I am not making that up. Fleet Week.
And you mean the television show?
Yes.
I thought you like... I thought you meant like, you know, he likes NCIS and golfs, but you know, like NCIS and Bones.
Yes, activities.
I was gonna say, well, you know, he seems like an open-minded kind of guy.
But it's kind of, I was thinking that he was just one of the, the right-wing Republican cranky old listeners. Apparently, no, he is a stylish man who just does not like toilet humor.
Okay.
So, Dave Dishman, I have to say I thought less of you, but now I'm I kind of like you a little bit more now. So sorry about the pooping.
I can only do what we can do. As I think I said to I was saying to Alicia this morning, who was in the studio with us and helping to run the show, helping to engineer the show. You know, I've been doing this for like 24 years, and really this is what I got. I mean, that's, you know, if you like, I don't have a tremendous amount of range. I mean, what you're hearing is basically what I'm capable of doing. I mean, you've been on Outlook Portland. I can sort of hold it together for about 22 minutes or, you know, 48 minutes or whatever that is. I mean, for the better part of an hour, I can kind of feign seriousness and, you know, I can be sort of straightforward. But after that, it's like the wheels just totally come off the wagon. There's not enough duct tape in the world to hold that that facade together. So... it is 503-505-6964. Here's what we'll do. We got to give a little overview. Coming up today, we got a Snuff Watch coming up, Clown Watch coming up. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, is going to join us. And we have to make a solemn vow not to just spend the rest of the show refreshing Facebook.
Yeah, I know. I got to stop. And I got to stop, like, looking up the profiles of the people that said cranky things about
it's just it, well Cheryl actually
which is
said
just
that
too much fun really
Cheryl said that she's gonna make, you know, she's gonna try to snag the the Facebook comments as they go up before they get deleted, because apparently I think KPAM is trying to present a sort of, and I understand why some businesses do this, but I think they're trying to present a bit of a unified front so that it looks as though everybody is behind this interesting show that's going to be gracing their airwaves for the next day or two.
And you just don't want to start that. If somebody goes on there and sees that a couple of other people have already complained, then more people will just pile on and start complaining or telling those people that they shouldn't complain. You know, and it can become, a big mess.
Well, and the other thing is that, like, you know, and this has nothing to do with KPAM being a conservative station. It's just that it's a station that typically has, even if it was a liberal station, the stations that have one general tenor or ideology, there's not usually a lot of disagreement or discord with the audience. The audience isn't usually tuning in. You're doing it again, I can tell.
Sorry.
Seriously?
I gotta
stop. Focus. It can't be like another Shane Twitter day. I'm just saying, a station like that, or Air America is another example, where people tune in and, you know, they're hearing something that more or less hews to their particular belief system. So I would say that it is probably unusual. I think if you're the person who runs the Facebook page for KPAM or any station like that, you're probably not used to seeing people complaining about what they are hearing. Because by definition, a station like that is something you listen to because you agree with the ideology being put forth by the host, and most of the opinions are those that mirror or closely resemble your own. And so, I have to tell you, this has been not even really a problem, because, I mean, it just sort of, after a while, just get, you know, it is what it is. It just goes with the territory. But this has been an issue with most of the stations that I've worked at in my life. I mean, I would say up until the last couple of years, where I would, you know, I think when I went to work at Max 910, you know, they kind of knew what they were getting, because they bought us, you know, when we were already on the air in town, and CBS hired us after the whole huge out, you know, the coffee cup crusade with the listeners. So they kind of knew the deal. But most of the stations that I've worked at before, it's like they would just hire me from some other market. It's like they'd never heard me. They didn't know what I did. And, you know, and whatever they had on before wasn't this show. And I don't mean that this show's better. I mean, it's just saying this show is not like most things on the radio, for good or bad. This show is kind of its own creature. So whatever I had on wasn't this. It was always like Dr. Tony Grant or something, you know, or Susan Powder, which is who I think I replaced here in Portland. And so they were just never used to getting any response from the audience at all, much less people complaining about something. And so the first response from management whenever people complain is just to panic. That is always the first reaction of anybody in management whenever they get complaints, hate mail, hate calls, people saying that they're not going to listen anymore. Somebody say, God forbid, somebody calls up and goes, well, I'm going to tell the advertisers that I don't appreciate this. And it's like a klaxon goes off in the radio station and everybody freaks out because most stations just don't have to deal with that sort of response. So it does. There is the horrible wave of adrenalized fear that then rolls through the radio station whenever that happens.
Well, it was very nice, though, that on our way out the door, Dennis Glasgow, the program director, introduced us to, he said, the big man. Let me introduce you to the big man. I was not expecting him to be, by the way, physically such a big man.
He was like 9 feet tall.
He's like 9 feet tall. And he had one of those handshakes that's designed to just crush your hand and show you that he's in charge of everything.
Here's the thing.
But it was really nice that both of them, you know, were like, no, it was great. It was good. You guys were good. You made us laugh. It was terrific.
Dennis, the program director, said that I had some laugh out loud moments. So there you go.
There you go.
Can't ask for more than that.
Yeah, I don't really expect them to be telling us absolutely the truth. It felt a little bit like one of those things sometimes you see in movies and on TV where they walk in and no, it was great. It was great. You were awesome. We love you. We love you. And as soon as we walked out the door, they were like going, we have to get rid of
them. The locks are being changed behind us.
Never have them back.
Here's the thing.
But, you know.
Here's a little secret between you and me. Look, as long as their check clears, that's all Rick Emerson cares about.
I don't even know how much we're getting paid yet. You never told me. So
it's not important.
You could be slipping me here's $10. That's all they gave us. I have no idea. I'm just doing this because I go where you go, Rick Emerson. I do it for the love of broadcasting.
What did Ed Harris say to Alan Arkin and Glenn Ross? My end is 50, you know, and your end is to be determined later on, you know. Connie Hausman says, I have had all caps enough. K-Pam was just turned off. I don't want to hear about sexual acts. All right.
Well, to be fair, I'm now getting responses on my Facebook to those Facebooks, including Stephen Porter says, I guess it's hard to appeal to the Depends generation.
Oh, no.
See, that's not nice. But at least they're on ours. They're not on the other one. Someone else just says, winning!
Here's the thing. I've had like an hour and a half of sleep, so I could give a rat's ass. I could give a rat's ass what anybody thinks.
Yeah, we were doing our "it just doesn't matter."
Seriously.
It just doesn't matter.
F it.
Chant before we walked in.
It's not like I'm not trying to do a good job. I'm just saying again, it's like this is what we have, folks.
Yeah.
So you know. Anyway, Clown Watch coming up today. Snuff Watch. Ryan White for the Oregonian, music editor for the Oregonian. Ryan White's going to be here. Aaron Duran with the Weekend Geek. We'll talk a little bit more about our experience with K-Pam, where I was once again was paired with Charlie Maxton. Long-time listeners of the Rick Emerson Show will know Charlie Maxton is one of the many, many, many people who was saddled with the unfortunate duty of working on my ill-fated, terrible syndicated show.
He has one of those great patient faces of just like, there's nothing you can do to beat me down.
I'm fine.
No matter what happens, I'm fine.
I will say this, and this is not K-Pam when I'm saying this, but Charlie has worked for a lot of radio stations, and he's worked for a lot of people in Portland, and he sort of keeps in touch with me every now and again. I'll get an email from Charlie, and we've kind of kept in touch over the years. And as he moved from one radio station to another, and Charlie's a smart guy. He's smart. He's funny. He's smart and he's funny. And the combination of being smart and funny is that sort of just that makes you sort of savvy. And when you're savvy, I think things become either tiresome or irritating or just hilarious or some combination of the above really quickly because you recognize the fundamental absurdity of, like, your life and everyone else and what you are doing. And that is Charlie Maxton. And so I would just get these emails from him when he worked at what we'll call another radio station in Portland when I was over at CBS where he was seeing if there was a job available. And he would just end his emails with statements like, My boss is a 12-year-old boy. Every day I pray for cancer. You know, because he was just working for idiots. So he seems to be happy at KPAM now. So I'm glad things are working out for him. But it was a strange morning. Let's see what else. I got this thing about. I didn't tell this story in KPAM this morning for reasons that you'll probably suss out. I had this thing about a guy's penis. We might want to let Dave Dishman know about that. There's going to be some penis talk. Maybe he's, you know, maybe it's the opposite side of things he's interested in. Maybe he's not so much with the.
We should do a penis story for Dave tomorrow.
Yeah. Maybe he's more of a Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. What else do we have here? Plus, Dawn Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Monday.
Well, it turns out that John Hinckley is actually getting closer to the day he might get to out of jail.
The John Hinckley?
The John Hinckley. His doctors say he's doing better.
Oh, okay.
The Bronx Zoo closes the reptile house because their cobra went missing. And Alaska Airlines had to cancel 15% of its flights because of a computer glitch.
Excellent. By the way, these are being sent to me by Cheryl, so I'm just reading them as they pop up. Listener Martin Bush says, I couldn't stand their lame humor attempts. And hearing them say, like, more often than my teenage daughter's 3! Bob should be extremely pissed off by their childish antics, followed by 7! So,
there we go.
I really have, I'm thinking nerve strike with Mr. Martin Bush. We do want to thank, we got two more days, by the way, in case you haven't heard the fried gold that is our filling in for Bob Miller. We want to thank Paul Snowden, who's the producer over there. Also Alicia, who is the in-studio engineer and who handles some of the production tasks in studio with us. Charlie Maxson, also Ron and Ron, who was doing the sports, and Gina, the traffic woman. So, and of course Bob, who I think I would be curious to know, wouldn't you, whether they asked Bob his thoughts or his, I don't want to say his blessing, but if they just, or if Bob is just, I mean, because let's be honest. I mean, we can just speak openly here. I won't use specifics, but I mean, let's be honest. Bob Miller makes a good living.
Yeah.
That's a man who makes it comfortable. He makes a tidy sum over there at KPAM, and I'm not saying anything anybody doesn't know. But, he's been around. He's got a good following. You know, he brings some money with him as they bring some money in the door. So, you know, he's taken care of. I wonder if at this point Bob is just like, hey, you know, whatever. I'm going to be on like a 900-foot boat off the coast of the Serengeti. So, you know, whatever. You just stick an album of hand clapping on. You know, I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Someone on Facebook merely said, when does Bob get back? Very, very plaintively sad.
Oh, excellent. I am curious as to whether they asked him about that or whether they just waited until he was out of town and then he's out of broadcast range, Emerson, and then they press the button or something. So
no, we'll find somebody appropriate to fill in for you.
Sure. No,
get Emerson and Marconi on the phone.
It'll be fine. Well, that's the other thing.
I know.
I mean, it's like, and the thing is, it's like we're on today, the 28th, and then Tuesday, the 29th, and then Wednesday, which is the 30th. You know, and Marconi is doing this Thursday and Friday, but I think Marconi actually did last Friday too, which is the thing. I think he actually has already been on, although I didn't hear a lot of it. I heard just a little bit of Marconi filling in for Bob Miller, and I got to say, and I mean this in the best way. I don't mean to be snarky about this. Marconi does a pretty good Bob Miller. And I don't mean to be, I'm not trying to be flip about that. I mean, it's like I think Bruce Agler nailed it. He said, if you were to make Bob Miller, you know, like younger and sort of sillier, you know, Marconi nails that pretty well, actually. I don't know if that was his intention or if that's just sort of what he does when he's not trying to, you know, when he doesn't have to cram his humor in among, a bunch of Shinedown records or whatever. But it was an interesting experience. So we're going to have two more days of that. So you can listen to us 7 to 11 a.m. on 860 AM KPAM, the voice of Portland. That is from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. And there is, by the way, and this is my fault. I have to apologize to everybody because people asked about a live stream of KPAM. And there is a live stream, which I meant to put up. And I don't know if it got posted by somebody else in my absence this morning, if Cheryl or somebody did. So if not, I apologize. I have the direct link for the KPAM live stream, which I meant to put up this morning. I didn't. But I will put that up tomorrow and Wednesday because people have said, you know, they're not going to be in their car and they wanted to be able to have a chance to hear it. So I will put the link up on Tuesday and Wednesday for that. So that
and you
will
can
be
also go to the KPAM website, and there's just a listen live button there if you're at your computer.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So
I had friends. I had friends in the Los Angeles area listening to us this morning because I emailed and said, "Hey, we're going to be doing this."
And they were
it's kind of insane. Yeah, and I believe I told you one of my friends who said I had to switch back over to Pandora when the Bill Riley moment came on.
Yeah, but you know, did you notice that, you know, when you listen to Bill O'Reilly do those radio segments, and he's not nearly so unhinged sounding as when he does the television thing. There's some sort of weird red flag and the bull thing that happens with him and a camera. You know, where it's like they point the camera at him and he suddenly just becomes volcanic about like everything. He sounded positively modulated this morning. So.
By the way, Connie Hausman, who turned off the radio because she couldn't stand us talking about sexual acts.
Yes.
Connie Hausman only is a fan really of one musical act, and that would be Coldplay.
Ah, it's fantastic. Okay. I don't even have time to get to this. I do have time to get to the penis thing, actually, because it's pretty brief. I will just say this. We'll talk more about the poker game later. So this weekend, I had another money-losing expedition to Scott Dalig's house, which I think you actually sort of depicted in living color through a series of Viewmaster-style stills.
And I had plenty of time to take pictures, being as I was the first one out.
I forgot about that until just now. I'm so happy. Oh, okay. I forgot about that. I'm glad you reminded me of that, Don. That's right, because I was like the second or third out or something, but
no,
I wasn't
you were second.
First.
You were. It was first me, then you were out.
Okay, but it was a long time between first and second,
though.
There was a good 40 minutes after you went out.
Thank you very much, yes.
How did that happen?
Was it
that Andy guy?
Part of it was that Andy guy. I had a straight flush, and there was a king on the table, and I had a... There was king and queen on the table. I had a jack in my hand.
Yeah.
The only thing that could have beaten me would have been a... I didn't have a straight flush. I had a flush. Only thing that could have beaten me was a flush if he had an ace. And sure enough, he had like the ace and two.
Was that Keelan who did that?
No,
or
that was
Andy.
That guy, Andy.
Andy. Andy was...
I don't want to say anything.
Just the hateful narrowing of the eyes just there.
Andy...
Say it.
Andy was a huge pain in the ass. God. Andy was that guy who... just kept saying things that he thought were funny, and I'd look over across the table at you, and you'd just, like, the eyes getting small, and you'd just be looking down at the table and shaking your head. At one point, he said something that actually struck me as genuinely funny, and I laughed, and you just looked over, and you went, "Don't laugh at that."
What was
it? You just didn't want to encourage him at all.
Oh, my God. What was... Oh, Ryan, who was sitting next to me, and this is the last poker story we'll talk, because I know there's nothing worse than just hearing somebody else talk about their bad beats at the poker game or whatever. But, I mean, we're at Scott Dalig's house, so it's like, you know, my wife and Dawn and Keelan and...
Aaron's wife, Jen.
Bobby, yeah.
Catboy Roberts,
and,
yeah.
And this guy Ryan and this other guy Andy, both of whom are well into their beverages, well into their cups. And at some point, you know, there's like the Pandora thing or whatever playing in the background, and, you know, somebody was asking about, like, well, what should we listen to next? And, and somebody said, oh, God, no more dance music, you know, because Scott had a lot of sort of, like, techno or whatever going on. Anyway, but so at one point, the guy Ryan next to me just goes, well, we could all do the safety dance. And then Andy replied, and it was the delivery.
Right.
Because Andy replied, well, you know, if you want to. And I mean, and then you laughed, and you
couldn't help
and it was like the laugh. It was like the laugh didn't come out. It's like it escaped.
It was. I didn't want to laugh at anything he said, but his timing and his delivery were perfect.
Yeah.
On that one thing. Unfortunately, that encouraged him to then think that he was funny, and he kept trying for laughs the rest of the night. And you don't want to be that guy.
And the thing is, I think that his humor actually sort of. I think his humor was in fact some elaborate mental game, because I think that's what rattled you a little bit. Because I think you were just sort of a goddamn. Mother effing! I think you were sort of playing out of hate at his humor.
I have this thing I go back and forth though. My tendency is to play really really tight, and I've been trying to change up my game where I play looser at the beginning, because if you really want to drawing some money at the beginning of the game, you should play looser. And so I've been trying to do that, because I've actually lost a lot of games where I played too tight and just kept just leaking money, you know, in blinds and never being able to actually play a hand because I kept going, nah, it's not good enough. No, it's not good enough. And then, but still paying out on blinds. So I just decided, okay, if I get a good hand, I'm going to play it. But the thing is, it's so hard when you're playing at a table full of drunk people because you can't play logical poker because they're just betting on anything. So you bet big, figuring you'll drive people out, and they all just go, okay, sure, I'll bet on it anyway. I got a 2 and a 6. You know, and it's like, really?
We call that doing a mailman Chris.
Yeah, and so it just doesn't work.
On that note, it is the Rick Emerson radio program. More to come, including Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian and so forth. I didn't actually tell the penis story, but we'll get to it here in a few.
I want to share one thing before you go. Yes. On Twitter right now, Robert Wagner said, oh, Rick Emerson and Don Taylor managed to get three KPAM listeners over to Cascadia FM this morning. One of them figured out email.
So. Fantastic. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's see, I've got this third over there. Mr. Aaron Duran joining us now. Hello, Aaron Duran. How are you on this fine Monday?
I'm doing good. How's it going there?
It's going well, actually, all things considered. Seeing as how I've had no sleep, and this is the third radio show that I've hosted in 6 hours, I would say that it's actually going astonishingly well.
Sucks.
That's what I'm saying. It's for lightweights.
Yeah.
Oh, good God Almighty!
I don't think they're going to want me calling into KPAM either.
I already got.
Please, would you?
I got a few people already. My friend Chris Sneathan actually sent me a text. He's like, "Hey, so when I call in this week, he's like, do I have to be normal or can I bring some some shtick?" And I just said, "You know, whatever. Just don't tell me about it in advance. I don't want to know." So you know, what was funny is I would watch as we were sitting there doing the show, and we had some of their CBS correspondents. We talked to Steve Futterman today, who's in Japan, and then we talked to not Laura Schlesinger, but her first name is escaping me. Julie Schlesinger, I think. This is a financial correspondent for CBS. And so we were having that. But I would look over and Paul, who was the producer, would be answering the phone. And I would just see him doing this. Like, you can sort of read someone's facial expression, as they're on the phone. And it was that thing of, after about 5 or 6 or 10 seconds, you could see it became the patient listening through the screed, waiting to the end of the long ranting monologue about like what sort of juvenile inanity they had turned the station over to.
And he only shared one of those with us, and that was one where apparently a woman actually called Rick a whippersnapper and said that he talks too fast.
Which is awesome. So that's I can check that off my my personal bingo list. What is happening in the world of geekdom and nerdality, by the way?
Well, a couple of one's kind of a later bit of news. It happened over the weekend. The Superman movie found their Lois Lane.
Oh, we were just talking about that. So that's it's what's her name, Amy Adams.
Yeah, and I'm kind of jazzed for this choice also because she's a really good actress, and this seems really shallow, but I'm glad they found an older person to play Lois Lane.
Well, what did you say that she's 9 years older?
Yeah, than Cavill.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's actually a grown-up lady.
Yeah, she's not a – I mean, Lois Lane is often depicted as being – it seems to me from what I've seen that she's often depicted not middle-aged as such, but she's not a girl. It's not sort of a Smallville thing. And with – you would think the temptation must be, especially post-Smallville, even though that show, it sort of limped to a crawl, to just cast everything with just a bunch of, with a bunch of Gossip Girl types. And so I'm glad to see that they haven't, that they haven't done that.
Yeah, and it's always been kind of read by the people who've been reading the comics for years now that Lois Lane is actually a few years older than Clark. So I'm kind of glad they went this route. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. When is that movie actually – when is it coming out? I mean, they haven't even started filming it, obviously, yet if they're still casting it.
No, it's scheduled for December of 2012. So we'll be killed by the mines by then anyway.
All right. Well, fantastic. And this isn't – who is directing this next Superman film?
Zack Snyder.
See, my brain – just as I was thinking who is directing this, my brain said Zack Snyder, but I thought, no, brain, that can't be true. Please don't let it be true. But of course,
I mean, he's if you give him a decent script and you kind of watch over him, he can turn in some good flicks. I mean, 300 was flawed, but 300 was technically a well crafted movie. And as much as I loathe remakes, his Dawn of the Dead remake was a really well done movie. You just can't.
Yeah.
You got to keep an eye on him, kind of thing.
So there has to be somebody there minding the store while he.
Yeah, you do. I mean, he's got a good vision. You can tell that he loves the comic book format. You just kind of keep an eye on him, make sure he doesn't go too insane.
What else is happening? I know you sent me a heads up on this, but it's all been lost in the sea of toilet humor this morning. It's all been washed away.
That's right. Bob Miller should be ashamed.
Shamed.
I don't know if you guys see this in the opening story, but this is also a partial snuff watch. But the inventor of superglue died this weekend.
And so we, as I think so, did we have that story this morning?
We
that
did, somebody... and I have it in the pile for Stuff Watch later. But thanks, Eric.
Thanks for ruining everything.
Spoilers.
So we'll get to that dead. Here in a few. But it was another one of those things. It was like, you know, cornflakes or something. It was invented by accident, where it's like they just left the beaker bubbling too long or whatever, and they came back, and now my pasta sauce is ruined. But wait, and then it, you know.
Yeah, it was. He was trying to create some new kind of plastic polymer to help snipers on rifle scopes, and every type of plastic he made just kept sticking to whatever it touched. And figured he was a colossal failure, and he shelved the technology for about 12 years, and didn't pull it back out until like 1958 when he thought, "Wait a minute, this sticks to anything."
Was he just under the assumption that nobody would want it? Like there would be no possible use for that?
Yeah, pretty much. Just like in the post-it notes when someone thought, who the hell wants tape you can remove? This is dumb.
Who wants something that only kind of sticks to stuff? There's no possible application for that. The superglue is sort of – here's what I remember about superglue. Superglue, which is – and it's interesting to think that there was a time – so when did superglue hit the market, the actual product? Like when did it first become a thing you could go buy?
It looks like it was right around 1958 you could actually go buy it.
And so it's weird to think that there was a time when that didn't exist, because superglue has become – I mean it's a little bit like Xerox and Band-Aid in that it's become a catch-all. It's become almost a genericized term for something that is ultra strong in an adhesive sense, like an epoxy or something. What I remember about superglue growing up is that it was always positioned as a thing that was really, really dangerous. And I don't know if that's just in my household or if there was like a series of news articles or something my parents happened to see. But superglue was always framed as this thing that if you were not careful, you would end up gluing your hand together, or like your hand to your face, or your ass to your, like, you know.
Or your eyes closed.
It would be next to the eye drops in the cabinet or something. Or it's like you'd glue like your butt to your nose or just something. Something horrible would happen.
I did have a friend who fired super glue into his eye on accident one time, because you know how it gets that little crusty tip and you're supposed to just kind of cut it off or be careful with it.
Oh, yeah. You're supposed to pierce it with a pin or a paper clip.
Yeah. He did not do that. He thought, I know, I'll stare at it and squeeze really hard.
If I just apply enough pressure, this will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did something similar to that once, and I glued my lips shut.
Really?
Yeah, I was trying to get the lid off of it. It had that little pin that you stick in to keep it so it'll open, and the pin wouldn't come out. And so I put it between my teeth, and I pulled it out, and then it squirted onto my mouth, and I closed my mouth, and my lips glued together.
That is awesome. How old were you?
30.
I really wasn't expecting that to be the answer. I swear to God, I thought you were going to say like 9.
It was like a week ago, you know? It's like
oh, wow. Oh, that's so great. How did it... So, I mean, did it bond instantly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Half of my mouth was glued together, and it's like, and I started like running warm water on it and doing that. I don't know what it
Give
was.
Give me a knife.
Figured something out that you can put on it. I can't remember what it was.
Like nail polish
like
remover.
Like nail polish remover or something, and got it off. And then spent the whole rest of the day like peeling little bits of glue off my lip.
That is wonderful. I'm just picturing you with a pair of garden shears in the kitchen, just trying to hold on a second. Just trying to open your mouth.
You work across the table from me. You've seen me. I do crap like that all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, that's on a whole different level.
It's amazing that I'm not like blind or maimed on a daily basis.
My dad had to go to the emergency room at one point when I was growing up, because he used like super glue, but it's epoxy. And you know, epoxy is stuff that comes in the two tubes, and there's the plunger, and you push, you know, and they're inert by themselves, but if you mix them together, it becomes, I mean, and epoxy is like the real deal. Like you epoxy something, it's never coming off. And he somehow probably drunk, somehow got a handful of epoxy between the palm of his hand and a hammer that he was using. Oh. And so the thing is, if you're swinging a hammer, obviously you're clutching it because you don't want to lose the grip on it, especially if it's the old school like wooden hammer. It doesn't have the plastic. It doesn't have the rubberized handle or whatever. And so he's got a wooden – it's this hard hard wood, you know, slick-handled hammer. And he's just, you know, gripping it, and he's going wham, wham, wham. And you do that for, you know, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, it's in the sun with a handful of epoxy. And suddenly it's like you got hammer hand like for the rest of your life.
Oh, man.
So he had to go sit. And somewhere there's probably a photograph, because a doctor probably, you know, get me the Instamatic. There's probably some sort of Far Side cartoon-esque picture of my dad sitting in an emergency room with just a hammer just sticking there. And I think he said that they actually did have to They put it in warm water, and then they put like solvent or something in it. And then they did have to bring in like a nurse with like a knife or a pair of scissors or something, and they had to like cut the hammer off of his hand. So super glue, like, you don't want to F with that stuff. That is one of those. The thing about super glue is, whatever anybody wants to say about American industry or corporations or whatever, that's a product that works as advertised. Super glue does what it says it's going to do. It puts things together, and I mean, really, unless you use Herculean efforts, it's never coming apart. It's never coming off. So. Awesome. Is there anything else happening in the world that we should be caring about?
Yeah, one more thing. It's happening locally. It's happening Thursday, April 7th at Floating World Comics. Writer and artist Mike Alred will be doing a signing of the new collection of his Madman comic, Madman Atomica Hardcover. He's going to be a Q&A and a signing at Floating World Comics. There's going to be karaoke at 8 p.m. Floating World is at 20 Northwest 5th Avenue. Just like right across the street from Ground Control.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, people that don't know the comic have all seen Mike Alred before. He is in the opening scene of Chasing Amy in the convention scene.
And does the Blunt Man and Chronic artwork, right?
He's done some of the Blunt Man and Chronic. Yeah, he did some of the artwork for Blunt Man and Chronic, but he's the guy that has the name. He's the guy that has that line of Chasing Amy that says, I just love Chow Yun Fat, but I don't see him playing Madman.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So that's Mike Alred right there.
Awesome. So that is so that's going to be happening when? April 7th?
Yeah, Thursday, April 7th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Floating World Comics. It's going to be a really cool event.
Hey, by the way, so we were all at this poker game at Scott Daly's on Saturday. I was there, and Don was there, and Jen was there, and then Aaron wasn't there. Were you at that Geek-lesque?
Yes, I was.
geek stripping thing, whatever that was happening at Guardian
the
Games.
Geek-lesque. It was, you know, it sounds pretty cheesy, and it kind of was to an extent, but it was a really fun event. It was exactly what it sounds like. It was a bunch of very talented burlesque performers that also happened to be just hardcore nerds and geeks at their heart. So they worked their burlesque routine into pop culture themed performances. So there was a Batgirl. There was a Buffy at the prom. There was a Mario and Luigi. There was a Godzilla, and completely nerdy and fantastic in every way.
At one point of the evening, did you find the opportunity to tell her she'd been a bat girl?
What?
Okay, yeah. Thanks so much. All right. Find out more at geekinthecity.com. That is geekinthecity.com. Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That's Aaron Duran. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. Could we break at some point here?
Well, I suppose. Do you need to do something in particular?
I do. I've been up since 4:30 in the morning, and I drank a lot of coffee.
Spend all your time pooping, don't you, Don?
I do.
Okay. Thanks so much. Oh, by the
way. I asked Robert Wagner to forward me the hate mail that they got. Apparently, all the hate mail is aimed at Cascadia because I guess they were so enraged at us that they went and Googled me or something.
I see.
And that led them to Cascadia FM. And I guess they clicked on the listen line and heard someone use the F word.
Ah.
And so then their hate mail was apparently then focused purely on Cascadia FM.
Oh, it's good
for
to be
putting
alive.
Them in the position of having to listen to a naughty word.
I really am. There are days when I just relish this life and everything about it. There are days when I just never, you know, when I just never want it to end. I just never want to go to bed. I just want to stay awake and roll around in God's creation forever. And this is one of those days. By the way, we have to thank Cheryl. Cheryl said, I did put a link to the KPAM Listen live stream at rickemersonshow.com this morning. So thank you, Cheryl. We appreciate that. All right. We're going to take a break. Dong's going to go urinate. When we come back, we'll have Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. He's going to join us later on. We got your Snuff Watch coming up, Clown Watch coming up, and more. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere. We're back right after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I'm the kind to sit up in his room got sick and eyes filled up with blue. I don't know what you've done to me, but I know this much is true. I wanna do bad things with you. Shadows there, filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I wanna do real bad things with you. Things with you. I wanna do real bad things with you.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Drink one of his booze for free. I wanna be a star.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. See, now you shouldn't have put that in my head, you damn woman. Now I'm just... Don was just suggesting during the break that we, for tomorrow when we fill in for Bob Miller, that we just do the entire show in an incredibly racist Mexican accent.
We have come to talk to you and your sister here on the...
Now I'm Oriental. Wait, what was that?
Yes, that's exactly what you are, Don.
We have come to take Bob Miller's job away. We climbed over the wall and we are taking his arriba.
Okay. Maybe we won't do that. Maybe that's a thing that's better in theory.
And as I also mentioned, that our listener, Mike, who always signs his emails, Mike, black guy in Portland, did write that, Rick, dude, you think KBAM's listeners hate you now? Wait till they find out you have a black listener.
Today on KBAM, Negroes. Has it gone far enough? You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Can I just tell you this?
I certainly hope that the fellow who hired us does not actually subscribe and listen to our show.
Well, no, see, but this is the thing. You have to be. This is what I told Paul this morning, who's the producer over there. It came in again, nice guy.
Not like they're actually going to offer us a job.
This is the point that this is the distinction I made to him because he was talking to me this morning and he said, what kind of news stories do you like? And I said, well, you know, we do a lot of pop culture and whatever. And he said, okay, but is there anything in particular? And I just said, you know, kind of my stock answer. I said, you know, it's Bob's show. We're just, you know, we're here for a couple of days, but it's Bob's show. So, you know, within reason, just pick whatever, you know, whatever he would pick. And he said, he goes, well, you know, it's an audition. So I just want to make sure you sound as good as possible. And I just said, stop. I said, first of all, let's just stop right there. This is a we're here for 3 days, or for however long they're going to pay me for this week, and then I'm coming back over here.
You may think it's an audition, but we know better before we even walk in the door.
Yeah,
here's the thing. Yeah, it's like, well, in our show, we have a penis watch and a cannibal watch and a clown watch with a screaming going on behind the clown. On Bob Miller's show, they have a special bed for chicken stories.
This is a
because there are a lot of people who have chickens in their backyards.
It's one of those things where, you know, as I said, I just said, you know, we're sort of somebody else may be auditioning for something somewhere at some time. Filling in / whoring our other program.
And as we've mentioned, we certainly would not immediately turn it down if they offered to, like, just back a dump truck full of money up to our front door and give us a position in health insurance and that sort of thing.
That seems likely.
It seems unlikely.
Yeah.
Especially after the Facebook comments.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's welcome now from the Oregonian music editor to the stars and stylish man of the world, Mr. Ryan White. Hello, sir.
Hello.
I do have to... never mind. I was just going to... We got like another hour here, so I don't want to get myself too terribly off track. Ryan White, how's life? How are things?
Life's fine. I was going to say, when you guys were doing your accents, you sound like me. Every stuffed animal that I try to do a voice for ends up sounding like Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Frito Bandito is the only accent you can really do.
Hello, little girl.
I actually had an entire conversation over a changing table one time with one of them accusing the other of, like, of theft of intellectual property from Triumph. And
we were just complaining this morning. I was like, oh, you know, we've been up for a long time, Ryan. You wouldn't know what it's like. But then again, you sort of would know what it's probably just become your normal state of existence at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even worth complaining about anymore. We just kind of walk around in a dazed haze, and occasionally she does something cute and we wake up and go, oh, that's amazing, and we forget that she's slowly killing us.
Excellent. That's the spirit. By the way, just because somebody is now just typing in the screen, penis, 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 penis. Okay, I'll tell the story, because if I don't, I'll forget about it until tomorrow. And it's not like we can really, you know, not like we can really tell the story tomorrow. So tomorrow morning. It really just has nothing to do with, you know, anything in particular, except to say that before we went to the poker game at Scott, do you play poker?
Not well.
Well, see, that's the best kind of poker player, though. So we'll have to have you over to Scott Daly's house one of these days. So Don and I were there this weekend, as a whole bunch of people. And on the way, my wife and I stopped to have dinner. And it's one of those things where you just hear, like, a little bit of a conversation. Like, you just hear, like, a little snatch of dialogue. Just, you know, you don't hear the whole thing. And I seem to have this, I don't know, this knack or this whatever for just hearing little tiny bits of a conversation absent any context. But what we heard on Saturday was we're sitting at this restaurant and, you know, we're sitting at a booth and there's this guy in the adjoining booth. And I swear to God, the guy – and then I spent the rest of the time that I was there with my wife and I was sort of straining trying to hear what else the guy was talking about. And I couldn't hear the rest of it. And I very nearly – I didn't. But I very nearly got up and walked over to the booth and just demanded that the guy just tell me the rest of the story. Because he said this, and I wrote it down. He said – the guy said so yeah, then I was leaning forward and my dong went right into the fire.
Huh.
And then he added, I think rather unnecessarily, yeah, it hurt. So I don't know. And it was like, and so, but it was that thing
and
where
you
like.
You wanted so badly to lean over and say, excuse me, sir, I realize this isn't any of my business, but what?
Was it? Because the thing is, I didn't hear any of the rest of the conversation. It was like the rest of it was just sort of the low murmuring. My dong into the fire and it hurt. And then it was like just enough to tantalize me. And so then later I made an excuse to get up and go to the bathroom just so I could just, sort of, you know. But the table was like two women and like three guys. And so I couldn't quite tell who it was. And I couldn't match any of the voices or any of the faces. It was just, and I so badly, I mean, it just killed me to go because I wanted to figure out, because like how would that even, first of all, how would you even contrive a situation in which that took place? I mean, that seems like you really got to go out of your way. You really have to set up some elaborate, sort of scenarios in advance just to make sure that, I mean.
Yeah, but how often do you hear stories about guys like, you know, slamming themselves into car doors and various things that just seem logistically impossible and yet they end up in the emergency room?
I see. The only thing I ever hear about is guys who clearly put their penis inside of something that generates some kind of suction, like a vacuum. We had this. There was this story in Britain a couple years ago where a guy ends up in the emergency room, which has got to be one of those long, dark tea times of the soul where you just sit there and you're looking at, you know, whatever, the injury or the blood, and then you're looking at the phone and you're closing your eyes and going, God damn it, because you can just picture and you know that there's going to be some guy there with an iPhone. And it's going to go – it's immediately going to go like on his Flickr account or something. I mean, it used to be – don't you all agree? This is a conversation we can't have tomorrow.
No.
It used to be that if something got jammed in your anus, you know, you could just go and have it removed and probably nobody was going to hear about it. And it was a thing almost like it never happened. You could – pardon the phrase, put it behind you. But now...
Now within 20 minutes, somebody's doing a Twitter feed from the point of view of that thing in your butt.
Seriously. Yeah. And it ends up on the front page of Rotten.com. And it's like, and you know, you go back to work and it's like it's been hung up in the kitchen as a calendar.
And, well, it's apparently been an issue at a number of hospitals with them having to like stop nurses, nurse's aides, even doctors from taking photographs of things that are particularly horrific or embarrassing or something. Because, you know, they just pick up their phone and start to take a picture of it, and they're like, no, there are laws against that. No, you know, I'm just gonna, no, you can't take pictures during the surgery.
There was this guy in Britain, he had ended up in the emergency room because he had the vacuum cleaner, and it was the deal with the whatever that attachment is, it's like the long, hard tube that you use to clean up in the like the corners of your ceiling or whatever. And so it wasn't like a regular like stand-up vacuum cleaner that you push along or whatever where the whole bottom is exposed and you, whatever if you tumble down the stairs. This is an appointment insertion. And but here's the thing. And these stories always start the same way. It was like – it's like a Mad Lib where the verb changes. I was blanking nude and then – and so his whole story was he was like cleaning the drapes of the vacuum cleaner while nude and then fell down a staircase and that somehow his pants came down, his penis came out, he achieved tumescence and then an insertion into the vacuum cleaner
happened.
It's
all bad luck, really.
That's right, really. Yeah. It was just – it was the planets aligned in the worst – it was the most Aristotelian confluence of events.
Here's the difference between our show and Bob Miller's show.
Difference.
They talk about –
what is the one difference, Don?
I believe they talk about world affairs and current events and stuff. We talk about guys getting stuck in vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, but that was in London.
And I get an email from someone saying, hey, I think you'd really be interested in this video of Don Wells peeling potatoes.
I think I would.
Well, and in fact, I have that right here. It's a video.
I'd like to subscribe to that man's newsletter. By the way, listener Miguel says, if you'd like, I will call in tomorrow with my mariachi music blasting in the background.
Oh, please.
Please do.
Please.
Please, if you would. That would be fantastic.
We need to tell Paul that he can feel free to put calls through.
I should angrily fire you tomorrow for not having a birth certificate. I should demand.
Demand to see my birth certificate.
Yeah.
When I say I don't have it, you just accuse me of being born somewhere else.
What if through the miracle of radio magic, if I just gave you a savage Ike Turner beating on the air? What if you just said, well, I don't know that Obama needs to have a birth certificate, and it just sounded like I beat you senseless with a phone. Don't ever say that. Get out! And just kicked you in the hallway. And just, you know, and just came and just, you know.
And then
are you with me?
Then from down on the floor somewhere, I demand equal wages. And then you can just start kicking me.
Okay. We haven't actually done any news, so we'll just...
They're not going to hire us.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I don't know who at this table is trying to get hired by KPAM anyway. That's a...
I just keep thinking of Paul going, well, this is an audition.
You speak for yourself. Like I got nothing but free time at this point.
So, Gene Simmons...
Yes.
...is in Jerusalem. He's undeterred by the bombings because he's got a rock and roll. He has already begun arrangements for multiple KISS concerts in Israel, and the band would also love to perform in the Arab world as well, he says. He said the band, known for their makeup, flamboyant outfits, and pyrotechnics, would steer clear of politics when they perform, saying, it's the greatest show on earth. He also is there filming material for his reality show, Gene Simmons' Family Jewels, said he toured Jerusalem's holy sites, rode a camel, and enjoyed watching his girlfriend Shannon Tweed float in the Dead Sea, about which he said, that rocks.
So this is the thing you were telling me about between the two shows. That was his summation of the entire of his sojourn to the Middle East, which is, and as you noted, it's Gene Simmons is a bright guy. I mean, he's a phenomenally intelligent man. But I mean, that is the he. I
but
think.
But when asked for a quote, he thinks, "What's the lowest common denominator I can say?" That rocks.
I think Gene Simmons and you sort of nailed this. Gene Simmons is – Paul Stanley simply is Paul Stanley. He is that guy. Gene Simmons, I think, is a construct. And I'm not saying that Gene Simmons doesn't believe a lot of the things he says or most of the things he says even. But I think Gene Simmons is much more in some ways – it's strange, though, because it's sort of a weird snake eating its tail thing. Because on the one hand, have you ever – I mean, I don't know if you've – I know Carlin went – didn't Carlin go golfing with Gene Simmons at some point?
He went – Simmons was out here for a fundraiser last year, and he – Peter followed him around.
Yeah. And it's like, you said, you know, the same thing everybody always says. The thing is, Gene Simmons always has exactly the same – there's the same sort of chain of events with anybody that doesn't really know him or has a different sort of perception of him, which is that – you think he's a lunk or you're horrified and you don't want to meet him. And then, unless you're Terry Gross, you meet him and you end up finding out that he's actually a really charming, intelligent guy most of the time. And I think Peter, you know, who is – Peter and I have had our issues about KISS over the years. We've talked about that many, many, many times.
Imagine.
And, you know, but he said the same thing. Yeah. You got to respect him for being a smart guy and for knowing what he wants to be. But it's strange because as much as Gene's whole – as much as his whole sort of construct is – it's weird because the construct in a way is that it isn't a construct. He's very much his persona is one of like, I just say what I think and I say the truth that most men are, you know, not willing to say, and I don't candy coat anything, and that's just the way it is. And if you don't like it, you can, which is true. But at the same time, there is a sort of Gene Simmons character that he has created. Yeah. And I don't mean the onstage spitting blood kind. I mean, it's just, you know, there is sort of a persona that he has built over the years that exists out in front of him because he recognizes, as Don said, that is part of the – that's sort of part of the KISS persona. But he's – you know, but he's a fiendishly bright guy. And I mean, even if that Terry Gross interview, which is not available on the website, which is not in any of the her collections or books because he wouldn't allow it, you can get it online as a bootleg, but it doesn't really exist anymore. Even as horrid as he does sort of come off in that, depending on your perspective, you know, you would never accuse him of coming, you know, as being dumb, you know, or of not being a bright guy. You know what's strange? Here's the thing that I wonder. I wonder, just as I wonder why no one has ever tracked down that guy at Freightliner that was, you know, the inspiration for Tyler Durden, I wonder why nobody has ever tracked down any of the kids that were taught by Gene Simmons when he was a school teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, there is there's a couple years worth of kids out there from Spanish Harlem that were taught by Gene Simmons back when he was a public school teacher. And I mean, I would love to know if they have any memories of like of nice Mr. Klein and you know, and was he a good teacher, a bad teacher? Did he stand out in any way? I would be really honestly curious to know what it was like to have Gene Simmons as a teacher. Because he's a guy who obviously understands what people respond to in terms of communication and in terms of getting through to an audience of whatever variety.
You can have that story idea. It's
I'm telling you, that is something that I would like to
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, it sounds like phone calls. that was the thing, though. I mean, like, I remember when Peter was doing that story, and I had gotten the email that Simmons was coming too. And you know, I guess you know, score one for Peter for being braver than me. I looked at it, and I was like, you know what? I just don't want to be part of Gene Simmons' family jewels.
You just don't want to be on his radar at all.
I mean, it was, you know, it was clearly he was coming as part of the reality TV show, and you were going to get reality TV, you know, show Gene Simmons and the construct and all of that. And I was just like, I've seen that before, and I don't find that. You know, I don't know if there's a story there. You're not going to get anything new or interesting out of the fact that he's playing golf.
No, because, you know, again, he's a guy who, Gene Simmons is a guy who very carefully stage manages his persona and his image. And even,
I mean, I would love to sit down and talk with him. I just didn't want to do it in the presence of reality TV cameras and a golf course and everything else.
That's the thing. It's like, I think it's probably, I mean, you know, and I've never interviewed, I've interviewed Peter Criss and I've interviewed Tommy Thayer a couple years back. So I've interviewed, you know, and Peter Criss was the real big get because, you know, he's, you know, one of the original four members and whatever. I've never interviewed Paul or Gene, and I think I almost don't want to because I know, or I suspect anyway, that if I interviewed those guys, that all I would get is sort of the talking points. You know, and especially because because Kiss is so much about image and so much a construct. And Gene and Paul, I think, for different reasons, because Gene sort of, you know, very consciously is that thing. You know, but Paul just sort of speaks that way all the time. It's like you can't ask him. I don't know if the last time either guys saw A Decline of Western Civilization 2, the Penelope Spheeris thing. But there's
that
sequence where it's like Paul's being interviewed and he's laying on a bed covered with silk sheets surrounded by models in lingerie. And, you know, and she's like, Paul, you don't really live this way, dude. And he's like, as often as I possibly can, Penelope, you know, and it's like, he's just, you know, and it's like, he didn't even hesitate. It's just like, he just sort of is that thing. But they've also been asked every question so often and I think it's a lot of artists who get like that and a lot of just celebrities, period, where anything you can ask them, it's like it presses a button in their head and the little tape spools out the answer. And it's so hard to surprise them with questions, people who've been that famous. It's so hard to get them to ask them something they just haven't heard a jillion times. And you're never going to get a good interview that way. And it just ends up being sort of frustrating. So in any event. All right. One final note on Gene Simmons. Yeah. And somebody else just noted this. You know who else is freaky? It's not just him, but his kids. His kids were, like, scary smart. I mean, like, full-on, like, android smart. I mean, they really seem like cyborgian creatures.
His son did have that little kerfuffle where apparently he ripped off somebody with all the stuff for his comic that he published.
Is it Nicholas?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that a Simmons might be unscrupulous business dealer.
Apparently, he just flat out stole somebody else's artwork and, like, traced it and then put it in a comic book. And it was... there were panels from apparently fairly high-profile comics. And so he just thought no one would notice.
It's an homage, Don.
Yeah.
That's right. If at some point you read Gene's, he's got a couple books out now. If you read Kiss and Make Up, I think, which is the name of his first book. But I think, before the reunion tour had happened and they were still not on speaking terms with Ace and Peter. And what was really, really great is that they would have these long, elaborate discussions about Gene would do these big stories about how they recorded a song or, like, you know, what the backstory of recording a certain album was. And then he would just end every description with, Ace did nothing. And that was it. And so for God of Thunder, we went into the studio and I had a Gibson I was playing through a Marshall, and Paul and I stayed up all night working on a double-tracked reversed guitar part. And we really worked out an interesting repeating pattern for the drums that had an interesting flange and an echo on it. Ace did nothing. And like 17 times in the book it says that, which is sort of great because it's like such a dick move. Like, it's just – he's just such an a-hole about it that it's like he just goes 100%. Here's another thing. It's like Kiss My Ass, I think it was what it was called, was the tribute album, which completely awesome thing that only they could do. It wasn't even like the other bands had the idea. Like, they had the idea themselves to do a tribute album for them. And they actually put out this huge, like, open letter in, like, Rolling Stone and Hit Parade, like, we're doing a Kiss tribute album. Yes, you may submit a song. We may or may not pick it. You are now allowed to send us your song to this address. You know, go. And then they did the most two of the most a-hole things. One is on the inside, because it ended up being like 12 songs. It was like Lenny Kravitz and Garth Brooks and Toad the Wet Sprocket, go figure. But then on the inside, they just listed every single band that that sent them something that wanted to be in that didn't make the cut. And so it was like Pearl Jam, no. You know, and Nirvana, no. And they just had this like a whole liner note thing of just bands that they said no to. And then if you, as you're looking through it, there's just like all of these, you know, classic shots of the band and of sort of, you know, people wearing Kiss makeup. But every time Ace or Peter is in a picture, there's like somebody's elbow on the way. It's so great. It'd be like Paul on stage, you know, like twirling his arm and, you know, like in front of 50,000 people and Gene, you know, in Sao Paulo in front of 100,000. And then there'd be Ace. But then it's like Gene's boot would be coming up and like blocking his face so you couldn't actually see him in every single shot. I mean, you almost have to go like, well, well done, you know? So, all right, here's Don Taylor.
So would you like to hear Dawn Wells tell you how to peel a potato?
When you say that, you're not really, she's not really talking about something else. It is actually just her talking about peeling a potato.
She's talking about peeling a potato.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah,
is it?
You'll have to turn up my thing.
All right.
Here, so.
Okay, here's
Hi, I'm Dawn Wells. Well, you probably know me best as Mary Ann on Gilligan's Island. Well, now I'm in Idaho, where they grow some of my very favorite foods, the Idaho potato. Well, I grew a lot of vegetables on the island, but even the professor couldn't grow a good potato.
Okay, would you
pause
this for a second?
But in real life, I really love to cook, and there's nothing better.
Yes.
How long is this?
It's like a minute.
Okay, so it's not, this isn't like a 12-minute
No, it's like a minute and a half.
Okay, just checking.
Other than a really good cooking tip. Ha! Boy, have I got a cooking tip for you for the Idaho potato. It's going to even knock the professor's socks off. It is a real doozy. Well, first you bring your water to a boil, and then you prepare your potato. Ha ha, thought I was going to use a potato peeler, didn't you? No, you throw the potato peeler away, and you take a very sharp knife, and you score the potato all the way around, just like this. Then you plunk it in the water. You're going to let it boil for about 15 minutes. In the meantime, I'm just going to browse through my Gilligan's Island cookbook.
I have a copy of that, by the way.
Me too.
The professor was a hunk, wasn't he? All right, we're back. Now, here's what we do. We're going to take one of the potatoes out of the boiling water with our tongs, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
And we're going to drop them right into the ice water. Moving around on the ice for about 10 seconds or until it gets a little cool.
Is it easier just to peel a damn potato with a peeler?
And, like, what is this in aid of?
Oh, here she goes. Oh, she's squeezing the potato with both hands. Ta-da! And the skin came off.
Okay. How easy is that to peel an Idaho potato? Oh, well, it works on any potato, but an Idaho potato always tastes better. It's magic.
Okay,
no,
so,
it's not magic. Ah, and then she's got, like, some weird animatronic potato thing.
So what is the ostensible point of this? Is this like the Idaho potato people have put her? Is it just because we were not aware?
She has a potato hand puppet that she's talking with now. I don't know what.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, I guess she's a spokesperson for Idaho potatoes, and
I mean
that's
are the there most... potatoes from elsewhere? I thought they were all from Idaho.
No. There's potatoes from all over the place. There's potatoes grown in California. I believe there's potatoes grown here in Oregon.
I see. So this is
you
just
grow potatoes all kinds of places.
So this is to raise top of mind awareness, as they say, about Idaho potatoes.
I don't understand that kind of marketing, because I like Washington apples. You go to the store and you look at the prices of the apples. You look at the makes of the apples. You go, oh, it's a Gala. It's a Macintosh. It's whatever. I'm going to bake something. I want a Granny Smith. You don't go, oh, well, wait a minute. These are California apples. No, I want the Washington apples. I'm only going to buy them if they're you don't do that. So I've never understood about brand awareness for
I think that what the deal is that they all want to be like Florida oranges. That's the thing. Because it's like if you just saw like oranges from Oklahoma, you go, no. Because your brain is trained to think of certain places as being, being fertile ground for whatever kind of food or fruit or whatever. So I think that's the thing. If they're all they all look at that and they all want to be – and they hire an ad agency or a PR firm and they say, hey, the Florida Angels, do for us what what they did for those guys. And so that's – and you got to get – I mean, to be fair, you got to give it up to the Idaho potato people because I didn't even know there were potatoes from anywhere else. I mean, I sort of figured they all just kind of came from there. So they've done a pretty good job with that.
I will say, as someone who has prepared potatoes many times in my life, that actually using the damn potato peeler is probably easier than bringing a whole pot of water to a boil and putting a potato in the boiling water, then taking it back out, then having a bowl of of water with ice in it and then plunking it in the ice water and then just peel the damn potato with the peeler.
I suppose. I should also note this, like, how much more time we've spent on this subject than I really would, you know, if I had it to do all over again.
Well, for one thing, it's relatable. Everyone likes potatoes, and it's not about pooping.
Well, I suppose. But this is a safe place for that, Don. Here's where your poop can be free. Ryan White, what is coming up in the Oregonian?
Have we talked about Red Fang?
No.
No.
I do not believe so.
We should talk about Red Fang. They're like the anti-Portlandia. They like, if you put a bird on it, Red Fang will kill that bird.
So what is, I'm not even really sure that I'm aware of them.
They are a very heavy rock band. They kind of got on the map, their first record. They had this great video for this tune called Prehistoric Dog. It is really, really heavy, cool rock. And so their second record is coming out April 12th, and it was produced by Chris Funk from the Decemberists, which after he was kind of courting them, and they were like, really? A Decemberist? You're not going to produce our record.
Right.
And he started sending them like these really heavy riffs from the Hazards of Love. There, when they, you know, those Sabbath like parts. So eventually, they're like, okay. And it turned out, you know, that when you have a Chris Funk, not only do you get like cool studio space, but you also he has a lot of equipment that
yes.
they're able to use.
I would imagine that it's a plush recording setup.
And then Funk was able to talk Vance Powell into mixing it. And Vance Powell is Jack White's guy. In Nashville, so they took the tapes to Nashville to Martina McBride's giant called Bluebird Studio, which had even more equipment than Funk could even imagine was over there. And then they went label shopping for about a year, and it's coming out on Relapse Records on the 12th. But and I assume probably the Funk connection had a little bit to do with it. But NPR is streaming the record right now, which I did not expect. There's a part of me that thinks it's just, you know, they're pissed off at Congress and acting out. They went to their room and they turned the stereo up really, really effing loud.
You don't really think of NPR as being an outlet for your harder rock and roll.
No, but it's a really cool record. They're going to be here. They got one of the opening slots on this Met Alliance tour that's just coming through town on Thursday with Helmet headlining.
Helmet?
Yeah, they're playing.
Wow.
They're playing their big record. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Helmet?
Helmet is, yeah.
Not Unsung. Unsung was the single. It's the Meantime.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they're doing one of those.
We'll play the whole thing all the way through. As opposed to all the other Helmet records that everybody was agitating to. Please play Betty all the way through. God damn. Given the 90s were just such a bad time and it was such a weird time for music and for rock. I remember just working at a rock station. And it's like, and getting the new Helmet single. Helmet, by the way, Helmet is a real cautionary tale because the guy from Helmet, Paige Hamilton, who, you know, was something of a, probably still is something of a control freak. And he's one of those guys that, like, after the first record, either he decided or somebody convinced him. It's that whole thing of, like, I am Helmet. Where, and it's not like a Trent Reznor thing where, like, clearly he really was Trent Reznor and he just, like, hired some guys to help him sing. The Paige Hamilton and this band around him, and he just sort of, like what's his name? That Travis, the hell is that Travis Meeks guy from Days of the New? Yeah. He's another guy where it's like he puts out the single and then somebody goes, no, these other guys are you. Joke, it's all you, baby. You're all that's important.
And or so, Axl Rose.
Yeah, and then suddenly decides, like, I am king, and now they will worship me alone. And then it's like you just never hear from those guys again. And I remember getting the first single from the second Helmet album, from the follow-up Helmet record, and it's like an Unsung had been such a huge single. But I remember just getting, and it's one of those moments where you realize the band has just sort of peaked and they're probably not going to be achieving the great commercial heights they were hoping for. Because the single off the second album was called Biscuits for Smut.
I remember that.
Yeah. And I went, oh, okay, well, wow. that was enjoyable. I hope you saved some money. It's a short ride, kids. Because there's, you know, so anyway, well, good for them, I guess.
Yeah.
The last thing I heard is he was touring Europe a lot, so.
Well, they're doing this national run, but Red Fang's got one of the opening slots on it.
So what do they sound like, Red Fang? I'm not even, like, not having heard them, I don't even.
Oh, you know, the PR stuff says, you know, for people like Queens of Stone Age or whatever.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's kind of really heavy, riffy. They got a lot going on underneath, you know, a lot of neat little guitar lines and stuff like that. But they're howling and they're just nothing like what the image of Portland and the Portland music scene
is.
And I love that.
I was just going to say that. The reason I'm so intrigued by it, and I will definitely make a little note to myself here, is because you don't. This is the sort of statement that you almost immediately have to qualify because otherwise people get pissy about it. But you, when I say you don't think of Portland as a real rock and roll town, I mean that kind of rock. You don't think of Portland as being a hard rock town. And people will say, well, no, 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 you haven't heard so-and-so. What there is, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of punk and there's a lot of really loud, aggro, like sort of hardcore punk and things that are sort of like a strange kind of speed metal bluegrass hybrid, but you know, you don't have a band that is like that is your Sabbath, that is your Queens or the Stone Age, which is big slabs of great dumb rock. You don't hear that a lot in Portland unless it's some guy doing it as a gag. You know, unless it's somebody doing it as a goof.
And these guys are serious, and you know, they've got their long hair and their tats, and they drink heavily. I remember they did a lot of the vocal recording at Kevin and Anita Robinson's studio from Viva Voce and Blue Giant.
Right.
And so they did a lot of the vocals there in that studio, and Anita was telling me that, you know, they called them up one day and said, hey, just so you guys know, there's no beer left in the fridge over there. And so, like, each one of the four guys brought a case, and she goes, I think they drank all of them. She goes, recycling was the next day, and I was just embarrassed to put the recycling container out on the street.
That's fantastic. Because there's bands. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, we've all been around for a while. I mean, is there a Portland band? Because this whole conversation makes me think of somebody. But is there a Portland band of whatever genre that you look back and you think, you know, it should have been better. Should have been bigger. You wish they'd been bigger. You wish they'd broken through in a major way. Because for me, when you talk about hard rock in Portland, there's this band, and they may still be around. I mean, who knows? I could be talking out of my ass. They might still be putting on a record. But there's this band called Naked Violence, and I heard the Naked Violence. I don't know, in like maybe 99, 2000, and they were so great. Here's the thing that I'm a sucker for. I'm a sucker for big, loud, trashy, as opposed to sleazy. Not that I mind sleazy, but trashy rock. And the front of this album was actually, there was no actual nudity, but it was a topless woman. And when I say that there was no actual nudity, it's because where there would normally be nudity on this topless woman, she was just covered by a huge pile of cocaine and razor blades. And then on the back, it was a shot of her, again, topless from the back. And on the back, she was just covered in spattered blood, which is sort of thing you see that you go, and that can either go one of two ways. That can either be some, like, it can be the, sort of the Ween approach where it's a guy having a go at it, where it's just supposed to, it's funny or it's kooky or it's ironic. Or that's a band, you know, that clearly was raised on that kind of music and is now just, you know, and they are projecting everything that they absorbed. And they were the latter. And it was a band. It was a band. I said this at the time. The way that I think I phrased it. I said that they were a band that was coming to sexually assault your sister. is I think how I described it, which is maybe now not the way that I would choose to put that, because it doesn't really sound like a compliment now that I say it out loud after like a decade.
Did you hear that last Grinder Man record?
No.
Which is kind of when Nick Cave isn't dirty enough with the Bad Seeds, he puts out a Grinder Man record.
Yeah.
And it was like, I listened to it once and I described it to somebody as like, I'm afraid to leave it home alone with my wife because it will sleep with her.
That's the thing. And it's like, that is exactly, you know, and that's what I heard this band. There is nothing better to me. A few things anyway that are better than when you hear a band. Usually it's hard rock, but it doesn't have to be, where you hear a band and there's that sense where you go like, these guys are not effing around. Like they are, you know, like this is, they are not, this is, they are not joking. They're not kidding. Like this is a band that is trying to make an album that harms you. I mean, they are trying to create music that leaves a bruise. And there's something, you know, there's something to be said for that. So Red Fang.
Yeah,
awesome.
Red Fang. And awesome. It's streaming now for free between now and I guess April 12th when the record comes out on NPR. So you can go listen to it to your heart's content.
You know, this is another thing. And, you know, it's like back with, this is like the Gene Simmons being a teacher thing. It's really, you know, a lot of work. So I don't know. Man, somebody's probably done this article or whatever. But somebody, you know, ought to do some overview. I'd like to see an overview of 5 or 10 bands from however long over Portland history that maybe in it, if the wheel of time had turned slightly different, or if the planets had aligned somewhat differently, would have been bigger or would have made it, would have been mainstream successes. Because, you know, Portland is like everybody else. We must have bands like that.
The Dharma Bums are probably a band like that.
Yeah, when you hear them, you hear people talk about that Theater Sheep band or whatever,
When I first moved here, I couldn't walk. It seemed like I just moved here and didn't know anything about Portland culture at all. And I couldn't walk like a half a block without seeing a damn sweaty nipples sticker somewhere.
Sweaty nipples, you know, even, you know.
And I just kind of thought at some point, despite their name, they must get huge because they were, apparently everyone in town was going to their shows and listening to them.
There's, you know, even in Kennewick, which is not, you know, not like another planet, but I mean, Kennewick's several hours away. And, you know, that was before the internet and whatever. Even in Kennewick, you know, we heard, I've told Davey Nipples this actually. I've told him these stories where when I was in Kennewick and I would, you know, I would see these stickers or like you'd see a guy who had a guitar and he'd have like a sweaty nipples thing on the case or whatever, or you'd see like the, you know, the 7-inch or whatever, and say sweaty nipples. And I was like 13 or 14. And so it was at that age where you're like, oh, that sounds really interesting, but it also sounds naughty. I think I might, I don't know, my eternal soul might not be saved if I listen to that. I better avoid it for now. And, you know, and those guys seemed like they were on the brink, on the verge of, and they're still, you know, you will still meet a lot of people who know them and who name check them. And you got to wonder if maybe if you went back and if they didn't have a name like Sweaty Nipples, who knows? Maybe that's, you know, 20 years ago, that thing might have held you back. Are the Crazy Eights, were they from here?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's, you know, and I know that they, and again, it's not like none of these bands had success.
Right.
But I mean, it, you know, but bands that come out of Portland and kind of take over the world are very few and far between. You don't get a lot of those.
No.
Like Court Weber will just, you know, he can go on and on about the Crazy Eights. And it's just a band that I really don't know much about. And it seems like a lot of bands in Portland are like locks where all the tumblers click but one. And they just don't. You know, which is sort of in a way a microcosm of Portland itself, where Portland seems to be perennially on the verge of something huge happening. Portlandia is sort of interesting that way because it seems like Portlandia is a show that if everything falls just right, that's a show that could really become some sort of freakish cult success. I don't think it's going to happen, but it could.
I got an email Saturday from a freelance writer in Sweden who is working on a musical companion piece for a Swedish pop culture magazine to go with a larger story that the music critic for the magazine is writing about Portlandia and why the dream of the 90s is still alive here, and could I help her out? And then I swore for a little while, and then I sent her an email and said, sure, I can help you out. Here, check out these bands. And not only did I send bands that, you know, really are kind of, you know, big in the scene right now, but none of them have anything to do with the 90s. I mean, I finally got my hands on the new Sally Ford and the Sound Outside record, their debut, which is going to be on Partisan out in May. And I just kind of want I want to listen to it on the jukebox from Arnold's in Happy Days.
And is this from his perspective, because he's looking at that Dream of the 90s thing as being like a sort of documentary piece?
I guess. I mean, I didn't hear from him. I heard from a woman who was doing the musical companion piece. So I sent her like, you know, there's, you know, I sent her Red Fang and I sent her the, you know, Sally Ford and DeLorean and you know, stuff like that, and which I just don't think of as very 90s.
When is the Red Fang show coming up on?
It is Thursday with part of that Helmet tour.
All right, Thursday.
And I think they'll probably have some stuff. I mean, they've got a couple of big tours coming up this summer, but I'm sure, you know, there's going to be something that they'll do on their own as a headline deal. It's around the time of the record.
I will. Somebody just said the typed a description. It said the Yes to the Queens of the Stone Age sound, maybe with a little Clutch. And then he summarizes by saying, there is zero chance you won't love Red Fang. So, but then he notes again that he sort of undercuts it by saying, Red Fang sounds like the name of a Vampire the Masquerade LARPing clan. So that really is true. All right. I think we're still at the news desk, but maybe not. I don't know. Here's Don Taylor.
Our update, we haven't checked in with Facebook.
You just can't leave it alone. Just can't let it go.
I just have to say that our good friend Robert Wagner.
You know, we're doing a show here right now, right?
Our good friend Robert Wagner from Cascadia FM, who hosts us at Legion of News, posted twice on Facebook to say, first of all, he said, I for one just can't stand listening to these two young whippersnappers with their long hair and hip beatnik humor. These kids today, so gosh darn disrespectful.
Fantastic.
And then he followed up and said, and because sarcasm is lost on the elderly, I heart both Rick and Dawn, and the previous comment was made in jest.
Excellent.
So this is a horrible story. Sometimes we have horrible stories that are hilarious, and sometimes we have horrible stories that are just horrible. And this is one that is just horrible.
Why are we reading a story that's just horrible?
Because you have to see the picture that goes with this. You have to see this guy's mugshot. Cameron Spurbach, a 21-year-old Florida man, was jailed Tuesday after he molested a 9-year-old boy in a zoo restroom before fondling himself. The boy had gone into the zoo restroom. He was approached by Spurbach, who pulled the boy's pants down and fondled him. Then he fondled himself. The officers were notified after the little boy ran outside to his parents, told them what happened. He was detained by security. He was a volunteer at the zoo when this attack happened. Spurbach suffers from something called Treacher Collins syndrome. And if you look at his mugshot.
And so this is at rickemerson.com/pictures.
Yeah. This is what makes the story even more disturbing, is that this guy has like just weird, creepy horror movie face. Okay. From whatever Treacher Collins syndrome is.
So this is, I'm going there right now. My computer's choosing this moment to be slow, but it's rickemerson.com/pictures and then visual aids for whatever today is. What is today? Today's the 28th?
Yes.
All right. So rickemerson.com/pictures visual aids for March 28th, 2011. Hold on a second. So I'm down. Pictures. Okay.
He was, by the way, booked into jail on charge of lewd and lascivious molestation, lewd and lascivious exhibition, and is being held on over $100,000 bail.
By the way, several of our Florida listeners, before you even got to like the description of the story or like what he was, they just, I would like to think this is with some sort of a shame, but they just chimed in, hey, he's from Florida, and then a smiley face. Whoa, oh, do not want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Why did you do that to me?
Because...
Oh, I hope you die.
That just...
I hope you die alone and in pain.
This is why we're here, though, is to share these things. That is... Yeah.
Why? Would you do this?
You know...
Why? What has happened to you in your life? Where is your human... At long last, have you no decency?
No. I guess I don't. But I just...
You're sure he's not wearing a mask of someone else's face?
No, in fact, the piece I found here, it actually went out of their way in the piece that I pulled. That says,
actual face.
It says, and no, nothing has been edited in the mugshot to the left. This is how Spurbach appeared on the day he was arrested.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is like on those weight loss commercials that they have to show, like, photos shown represent actual weight loss.
Yeah.
So what is the name of this this peculiar condition that
it's,
this
called Treacher Collins syndrome?
It's called kill it with fire syndrome.
Yeah,
is it? I mean, what's happened to this face of this man has?
Yeah, what, this guy wasn't just arrested. He was. I think the villagers came at him with pitchforks and torches.
Here's the thing about this mugshot. Okay, here's the thing. I apologize for doubting your judgment, because when you said it's a horrible story that, you know, with horrible things, and I was like, well, why? You know, why are we – and you said, well, it's worth it for the mugshot, or, you know, you have to.
Yeah, you have to see it.
I thought, well, that's one person's assessment. You're really right about this. Here's how horrifying this mugshot is. I wanted to kind of see what is up with this guy's face, but I'm afraid to get too close to the screen for fear that he will somehow just – extrude himself from my monitor, and he will pull my soul, or perhaps my whole person, back into my... I mean, this is really just wrong on so many levels.
Yeah. He looks like his face is, like, melting.
He really... No, but seriously, he does look like...
At first I thought he was a guy who had gotten a face transplant, because he kind of has that weird... That look like the face transplant people, but no, apparently this is it.
Or he's just got one of those all over Halloween masks that comes with the hair,
like
and the
wrong side out Shatner mask.
Yeah, but it's not just the mask over the face; like it goes over the whole head, and the whole thing. It's all kind of loose fitting. I mean, that's sort of what it. He kind of looks like that sequence in Texas Chainsaw Massacre when Leatherface has that Joan Collins looking face on. When Leatherface goes to make dinner and he goes. And he changes it. He puts on the different mask for dinner time.
Yeah, that's the only
thing. And he's rouging himself.
That's the only thing that could make this worse is if he was wearing lipstick.
Okay. And gyrating slowly by your bed while you slept at night. Yeah. That'd make it worse.
Yeah. That would
all
be
right.
Bad.
Or if you were – here's what made it make it worse, Don, is if you were in a public place using a bathroom stall, and then this face just slowly slid its way under the stall door looking straight up at you. That would probably be worse as well.
Also, there's another picture there in the visual aids, but we're not going to read the Clan Watch today because it's also molesty. And I just don't think we should do two molesty stories
in
one day.
It's just too much. We have to have some sort of a limit there.
Yeah.
All right. Good God almighty. You said Earthworm Jim has become a child molester. That's a terrible thing to say. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Happier news.
I'm going to close this forever.
Bronx Zoo had to close its reptile house indefinitely while it looks for a highly venomous cobra that went missing. According to the New York Times, there was a sign at the zoo that had been put up that said, "The world of reptiles is closed today. Staff observed an adolescent Egyptian cobra missing from an off-exhibit enclosure on Friday." So actually, that's nice. They put up a staff.
Somebody's already tweeting from the point of view of the Bronx Zoo's cobra, and it's really funny.
And so you said
Bronx Zoo cobra at Facebook.
And it's what, the House of Reptiles, you're calling it?
The World of Reptiles.
World of Reptiles.
The 20-inch-long cobra vanished from its enclosure outside public view sometime Friday, but zoo officials say they're confident that it's hiding in an isolated area away from the public. The director of the zoo, Jim Breheny, told the Associated Press that reptiles seek out confined spaces, and the cobra is undoubtedly hiding in a place it feels safe. They're just waiting for it to get hungry or thirsty and come back out into the open.
And when they say a confined space, I mean, they like to think that that means, you know, like, I don't know, like in a sort of wooded area or like a forest area. But, you know, that could just as easily be somebody's trunk.
Yeah. Or behind a toilet in the public restroom and somebody goes in to use the bathroom after looking at the bears.
When
like, surprise, cobra.
When I was about 12 years old, I've mentioned that when I was a kid, in the spring, we would have to go up into the mountains and we would, we would get lumber for the, you know, firewood for the winter, and so we would have to cut up these logs and pile them up and whatever, and we would have the truck out there like parked in just some like, you know, in the middle of the woods or in a meadow or whatever all day. And I remember when I was, I don't know, it was like I couldn't have been more than 12. We go up there and, you know, we have the truck and we bring it home and we unload the wood. And then my, you know, my dad and I just went inside the whatever. And then I ran outside, I don't know, probably an hour, hour and a half later, like, okay, I'm going to go run and jump and be free or whatever it is I was doing when I was 12. But I ran outside and it was that thing. I can remember this like it was yesterday. I ran down the front porch of the house and stopped immediately because we had a double driveway. We had the driveway was two stalls right next door to each other. And in the middle of the driveway, the stall that was empty and there was no cover or anything, it was right out in the sun, was a rattlesnake that was just coiled up in our driveway. And the only thing we have ever been able to figure out is that it just – because apparently they do this sometimes. Apparently rattlesnake snakes in general will crawl up underneath into the underworkings of the truck because the engine is running and it's really warm up there. And so if the truck has been driving for an hour and a half to get up there, well, the engine's going to be really, really toasty and warm. And it's spring, so they're around. They're not hibernating, but they're looking for warmth. So it goes and it wraps itself around the underside of the truck. Truck comes home, and then it says, "Well, hey, this has got to be different. Well, look, there's a nice patch of concrete that's been warmed by the sun. I guess I'll curl up there." And it was sort of a terrifying / badass thing when there was this snake in the driveway. And my dad, in one of the rare moments from my childhood where I was like, you know, "F yeah." My dad's like, "I'll take care of it." And so he just, like in one fluid motion, he like reached, I think he'd had like a backpack or something, he'd take it up. And so in one motion, he reached into the backpack and he brought up that like the little, that extendable spade, that little shovel you'd take with you for a Boy Scout that had this sort of triangular head on it. And he just said, "I'll be right back." And he's like, "What?" And I actually got on the phone with my friend, like, "You got to come over here right now. My dad's going to kill a rattlesnake. It's going to be awesome." And sure enough, a friend of mine bicycled up and, you know, and my father was like, "Hold on, Jim, don't get too close," or whatever, my friend. And so I was like peering at the front window, and for just one bright, shining moment, I had like best dad on earth. Because I'm in the window looking out, my friend is across the street on his bike, and my dad is walking out into the driveway armed with nothing but this Boy Scout shovel, and there's a rattlesnake there. And he did the cool stepping on it, with his left boot. And then he just took the shovel and just gave it kind of a "Kuh!" And took the edge of the shovel and just like beheaded it with one hit. And when you're like 12 or, you know, however, that is the best thing you've ever seen. And then he made a belt out of it.
That is so bizarre because awesome. I was sitting here and you were telling the story and I was thinking, and you were talking about the rattlesnake, and I was thinking, we went on a trip driving through Mexico when I was like 5 years old with my dad. And same thing, there was a rattlesnake. And I was only five, so I don't remember the exact circumstances. But I remember there was this rattlesnake and my dad ended up killing the rattlesnake with a shovel doing that same thing. And as I was thinking that, though, I wondered, it never occurred to me until now to wonder why we were out in the middle of the desert in Mexico and my dad had a shovel.
I wonder if best not to think about
something
that
going
too much.
On that
Well, you got to make ends meet
somehow.
It's
probably best I don't remember anything other than the killing. But my dad brought home the rattle part and put it in a baby food jar.
Yeah.
And so we had the rattle thing.
I just remember going back to school. I mean, it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. He did the whatever, like, you know, whatever the process for whatever the steps are to turn a snake into a belt. But I remember going back to school in like a month, and I had, I don't know, and you know, for however long until I outgrew it, I had like a belt that had – he bought a regular black leather belt and then just bonded the snake skin to it once it was dried. And I mean, again, that's – there are not a lot of things that will make you a big man on campus when you're like a spotty, scrawny 11 or 12-year-old boy. But that's one of them. So
My dad killed this rattlesnake.
And now I'm wearing its skin in victory. I mean, that's, you know, there's just no way to get around it. That is just righteous. That's the word for that. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. If you find this program amusing, you can thank our business partners, including Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Or you can call 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. So if my wife did last week, you know, you have a switch on something that typically works, like in this case it's the oil furnace, and it's always worked, and then you turn the switch to on one day and it just doesn't work. And really at that point you got the two choices. You got to call somebody, or you have monkey around with it yourself. And that second path almost always leads to doom and disaster and to people saying, she was so young. So you don't want to do that. You want to call Squires Electric, and you would turn it over to pros right away and just have them, because it's not like that. Here's the thing.
I bet Joe Squires would kill a rattlesnake.
Probably.
With his bare hands.
No, but with
he wouldn't even need a spade.
But with some sort of a Tesla coil or that thing that Lyle Alzado had in the, you know, in the the hell was that Lyle Alzado movie where he carried around a huge spark plug and he fought crime with it?
I don't remember.
You know what I'm talking about, Ryan? Have you you were just not prepared for the Lyle
Oakland Raiders?
Alzado. That was his crime fighting tool. That was a crime committing tool, the Oakland Raiders with Lyle Alzado. There was some movie with Lyle Alzado where he was electrocuted. You know, he was like in the electric chair, but like he survived or something. But then I think he actually decided to use his power for good. And he had some sort of a device that looked like a huge upended spark plug that he carried around, and he zapped villains with it. I have no idea what it's called. All I have to say about Lyle Alzado, apart from that movie, whose title I can't remember, is that A, the poster for it was hanging at a place called Discount Video, which is a video store run by a guy with one eye in my hometown who would rent porn to anybody. Also, and who had done some time in prison, I think. Also, Lyle Alzado, buried right here in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
So, and I don't know why that is exactly, unless he just died here and it was a sort of, and where he fell, so shall he be buried.
I don't know. I learned the other day, too, that the Baseball Project, which is Scott McCoy, Peter Buck from REM,
right.
and so they got a new record. Carl Mays, the guy who threw the pitch that killed the only player killed in a game in Major League Baseball, is buried here.
Really?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Years ago.
I mean, it was like ML Major League Baseball or something, and he threw it and hit a guy, and bam, dead.
Banana head killed him.
You know, are you surprised that doesn't happen more often?
It had to have been pre-helmet day.
I mean, it's
pre-batting helmet.
Or one of those things where a guy, I mean, doesn't it like the law of averages seem like, you know, a guy's got to hit a line drive, and it's got to hit another guy right in the face
in
and just take him out. I mean, it seems like that ought to happen more often than it. I'm not like I'm requesting. Like, that really ought to happen. But, I mean, it just seems like the math of it is such that it seems likely that it would happen more often than it does.
Yeah.
Like that stat we are there, that has been, what, since 1928 or something, there's only been one year in which there was not an on-field death during a football game of some kind, you know, whether be it college or high school or pro or whatever. So it just seems like it's fraught with peril. Well, now it's going to bug me. Now I got to look it up. Joe Squires, you know, if you can't find Lyle Alzado, I mean, I guess he's easy to find. It's really trying to get him up and around
at this
point.
What else is he doing, really?
We should totally make it. Oh, my God. We should totally make. This is why you can tell I've only had an hour and a half of sleep, because these things sound like brilliant ideas. We should totally have a movie based in Portland where we resurrect Lyle Alzado to fight crime. Because he's buried here. And it could be like a Friday the 13th Jason Lives kind of a thing, where lightning hits the grave and then Lyle Alzado rises to go thwart, you know, or to find the men who killed him. Or maybe not. This may sound like a bad idea later.
Yeah,
I mean, right now it sounds awesome. But, I mean, you know, it's...
I mean, really, who would play Lyle Alzado?
Well, that's Jim Willig.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Come on.
Was this Destroyer? Is that the guy? I have his entire filmography here on my IMDb app.
If that's his entire filmography, it indicates pretty strongly that that is his... I believe it was Destroyer.
Okay, because he was also in Comrades in Arms.
No.
Neon City.
No.
Hang Fire.
No.
Broken Badges. That was a TV series.
No.
He played Tiny on an episode of MacGyver.
No.
He was on a CBS School Break special.
How long does this go on?
I don't know. Shock Troop.
No.
He was General Orloff.
I do believe it is. I believe it is Destroyer. I believe Destroyer is in fact the movie.
Okay.
All right. Well,
he was also in Ernest Goes to Camp.
Really?
Apparently so.
Was that his last role?
No, that was 1987. That was a while ago.
The camp steroid dealer?
His last role was Comrades in Arms, 1992, whose tagline was Unlikely Allies, Unbeatable Force.
Okay.
It starred him and someone named Rick Washburn.
I would have been so...
Ooh, Lance Henriksen was in that.
Okay, you have to put that away.
Okay.
There are no bright, shiny objects allowed to be in your hand for the rest
Ooh,
of the
Mini
show.
Trucker Magazine.
Ooh, Yanni. Well done. You and I went two different ways right there, but we ended up at the same place.
I turned down...
God, we're retards.
I got an email for a Yanni teleconference like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man.
Oh, come on.
Jeez. No.
And then here's the thing. When
Pass
I said
those
no,
things on to us.
When I said no, they were like, well, he might be available for one-on-ones, too.
Oh, man.
Okay, can I just tell you this? And I'm not making this up. So my wife sent me a text about 4 days ago, and she said, this is why I love my wife. This is like reason 832. My wife is great. She sent me a text. My wife has what I refer to as this sort of, you know, a gently ironic sense of humor. But sometimes I can't quite tell when she's kidding. And anyway, so she sent me this text like 3 days ago, and she said, hey, will you take me to see Yanni? The paper says that he creates music that inspires the soul. And I looked at it for like 10 minutes trying to figure out how to respond. Because I'm going to be like, you're hilarious. What with your asking to go see Yanni? And then to have it turn out that like her yoga teacher suggested it or something. So I thought, so he's coming here.
Yeah.
They offered you an interview and you turned it down?
Yeah.
Serious? Okay, now I know that we talk about a lot of silly things in this program. Really, honestly. Why would you, Squires Electric, why would you turn down, Edith Fisher Jones, why would you turn down an interview with Yanni? He's part of the popular culture.
I didn't want to talk to Yanni.
Well, that's an unimaginative, if true, answer.
Because I'm working on interviews with Raphael Sadiq and Black Joe Lewis and other people who are good.
By the way, this is hour 9 that we've been broadcasting today.
But here, Yanni,
you want an interview? I queued up this press release for you because in how you didn't know how to respond to your wife about the Yanni,
right.
I wrote 7 drafts of my reply to this publicist. And
okay.
Dear Ryan, I'm writing per my voicemail wondering if you would be interested in an interview or mention for Cameron, 11-year-old vocal powerhouse who will be touring this April and May with singing sensations Grace and Chance and Cody Simpson. The Waiting for You tour will be in Portland on May 18th. Cameron is a super talented, fun, cool, down-to-earth, naturally charming, and vivacious performer, and above all, the real deal. Cameron gained her following through MySpace and YouTube and already has a street team passing out a sampler at every Jonas Brothers and Justin Bieber concert across America. There is lots of buzz developing with her debut single and the music video featuring guest appearance by Steve Urkel actor Jaleel White.
Oh!
Cameron is a girl, and she's a sort of a...
She's 11, and she's apparently a powerhouse, which is not an adjective I would ever apply to 11-year-old.
No.
Period.
By the way, everything you need to know about whatever music, kind of music it is told by the fact that she's touring with somebody named Cody Simpson. I mean, just the name Cody Simpson just gives it all away.
YouTube sensation.
Right there. Hey, I hate to be this guy, but let me just be this guy for a second. Have you written anything about, what's her name, Rebecca Black?
No.
Okay. I was just curious. That seemed like it was right on the verge of something that you might write about as a sort of microcosm.
It was, and I didn't have time to get to it. And then Stan Hall, who does a lot of movie stuff for us, emailed and wondered if I would like, he had some thoughts on it. And so I was like, by all means, do write.
It's an example of how quickly popular culture works and moves. We were talking with Paul and Storm about this last week, about trying to write, you know, they do a lot of stuff that has to do with internet memes and whatever, and how difficult it is. Because, you know, I was in New York for a week. And I mean, you know, it's not that I wasn't online, but I mean, I was online in the most rudimentary sense. Like, I was checking my texts, seeing if I had important email to get to, but I had no Wi-Fi in my hotel, and I was using my iPhone as a portable hotspot, which worked really, really well. But of course, with that, you know, it's like you read, you know, there's a ceiling where it's like if you get past it, you have to start paying more and whatever. And so I didn't want to use it too much. Plus, I had a lot of stuff I was doing. So anyway, the point is, I was sort of disconnected from pop culture, at least in terms of the internet. And then I get back here, and it's like the whole Rebecca Black thing had like started, crested, and sort of ended, like all in the time that I was gone, which was amazing. I mean, the only thing that made me feel better about it is that for whatever reason, Sarah Dillon hadn't really heard about it either, and so she and I kind of discovered the whole Friday thing on the same day. And it was really, I mean,
that happened so fast though, because
instantly
I saw this thing and it's like Rebecca Black. I have no idea who this is. And I jumped on, like, Google to see if I could hear whatever the song was she did. And there were already 7,000 parodies and people auto-tuning and people playing it up, the song on the ukulele and video. I mean, immediately.
I just got one yesterday. It was like Bob Dylan sings, you know, Rebecca Black's Friday or whatever. And when I tuned in, like I said, I was only gone for 5 days. When I tuned in, it had 43 million views.
Yeah.
And God only knows where it's at now. I mean, because even though, you know, people might say, well, that's already over. The thing is, that spreads, you know, not just across the country, but across the world. And it only is over to the most wired group of people who are the first to see any internet meme. You know, and it takes, you know, the keyboard cat or whatever, you know, like 3 months to trickle down to everybody else.
The terrifying thing to me about the whole thing was, I mean, and it was stupid and funny and, you know, briefly, you know, everybody could get off on savaging this poor teenage girl. But the fact that it got that many hits is only going to encourage more parents to pay the people who wrote the hit and did the video to put their kid
the
in it.
The thing about it is, like, and I got to say,
parents suck.
And I, you know, and here's the thing about that song is I'm not going to argue with some like work of art or whatever, but all things being equal, I don't think it's not that bad of a song. I mean, and when I say it's not that bad of a song, I'm saying if you look at it, if you judge it by what it is a teen pop song. It is a piece of piece of pop confection. And really, also, if we're going to be fair about this, here's the thing: when people say, "Oh my God, it's the worst song ever," you're making a bold statement when you say something's the worst song ever recorded. I mean,
is it really any worse than, you know, Justin Bieber repeating "Baby, Baby" over and over again? I don't think so.
And here's the thing, and I mean,
it sucked.
You this, I've only ever watched that Rebecca Black video once, and I know the hook. And I get to say, that's not easy to do. Whatever anybody wants to say about that song, it is not easy to write a song. There are whole albums that I've heard over and over and over and over and over again, couldn't hum a single melody. Somebody who can write a song that I hear one time and a week later I still can hum the melody to you, that's, you know, that's something. And also it should be noted that, to be fair, that song is actually sort of, you know, it's a demo. It's obvious, you know, it's not a – it's sort of an ingenious industry.
I still stand by opinion that the DeFranco family's Heartbeat, It's a Love Beat is the worst top 10 single ever.
Yeah, because the thing about that is the thing about Heartbeat is a Love Beat is there was an entire label saying, you know, with like a producer and a singer and studio wizardry and saying, we're really going to put our effort into this. That was the thing that I think she recorded in like 7 minutes, and then she went home and they went, well, we'll fix this as sort of like a, you know, because I get the feeling that ARC recording studio where Rebecca Black recorded this, from what I have read is that they are essentially an updated version of that service. It's like a vanity press for publishers where you could send your poetry to Rolling Stone and a guy would sing it, you know, or send it back. Or those things that they have at the state fair where you put a quarter in and then you sing into the microphone and it cuts you in acetate.
Or those things where you, like, send a guy $15 and your poem and he sets it to music and then sends you back a recording of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, and so, but you're right that, I mean, this is really, that's going to be the fascinating thing to see is like every parent plunking down the $1,500 or whatever it was, thinking like their kid is going to be the next Rebecca Black. And, you know, and it's just weird.
And really, do you want your kid to be the next Rebecca Black?
Well, because you got to wonder, I mean, as you said.
Getting your kid to be the next Justin Bieber, that's one thing. Having your kid be the next Rebecca Black, that's like, I don't want my kid to be Spaghetti Cat.
Because, like, this week she's going, hey, remember last week when I was famous? That was awesome.
Well, you know, I read an article a while back about the Star Wars kid, the kid in the, you know, the lightsaber video, and how, you know, it. The Star Wars kid is sort of – the Star Wars kid, when you read his story, you almost shouldn't, because it's just depressing. Because you hear that not only it's like when you read the actual story about the woman who spilled the McDonald's coffee on herself years ago that led to all of the warning labels, and when you actually read about how like she had to have like 17 skin grafts because it burned her to the bone.
All she originally wanted was, like, you know, first just an apology.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, would you cover some of my medical bills because I'm having to have skin grafts? That's ultimately why she ends up suing.
And so you read about the Squires Electric is no longer sponsoring this, by the way. We've ended that segment. We've moved on. But you read about the, you know, the Star Wars kid where it's like he had to leave school, and then the parents, I read some interview where they kind of put it in couched language. They coded it a little bit. But the parents all but came out and said that he had like a nervous breakdown at the end of it all, that he was no longer able to leave the house and interact with people because he had developed such a morbid fear, like a totally disproportionate agoraphobic fear of being ridiculed. And again, you know, and whatever. And I'm the first to say, you know, Rebecca Black's parents pay for the thing, and she sang it and she did whatever. But you know, no one on earth. You were just not prepared for that level of instant recognition. You're not wired for it.
Think about how awkward childhood is for those of us that aren't famous and open to anonymous public internet scrutiny.
Totally. Well, you know, you know what I think about sometimes is I think about the Monkees, actually, because, you know, yeah, they went in and they auditioned and they tried for the gig and they whatever. But, you know, even going in and auditioning for that Monkees gig, you would have no realistic, reasonable way to predict what. You know, even if the show got picked up, even if you recorded a record, you know what? A billion guys record a billion records every year. Nobody ever knows who they are. You would have no way to predict that you were going to end up being the most famous four people on earth for about a year and a half. I mean, it's amazing that more stars don't just flat out go mental.
Well, there was a story I read years ago when Friends was coming on the air, and James L. Brooks, who was producing it and directed some of the early, and he could tell right away, because he's been in television forever, that they had a really, you know, solid, you know, confluence of actors and writing, and the direction was really sharp. And right before the show first went on the air, the very first episode premiered, he took them all on a trip to Vegas and flat out just said to them, enjoy this, because this is going to be the last time you're going to be able to go out in public for a really long time.
Right. Which, you know, and everybody says immediately, oh, boo-hoo, cry me or whatever. But, I mean, it is – you know, it's a trade-off, and people can say that maybe it's a good trade-off. Maybe it's one they'd be glad to make. But it's like, with at least with the Friends guys, it's like they have, you know, the money and the power and the whatever to say, well, fine, you know, I'm just going to live in my mansion and the world will come to me. Rebecca Black's probably not going to have that.
No.
She's going to have the worst, you know, of all worlds, which is being famous without having any money.
Yeah.
Because that's where you – being famous and being broke is the worst combination, I think, because then – you can't get away from all the people who want to point at you.
Diamond and then, you know, selling like your old clothes on eBay or something so you can make your mortgage
payment.
It just
gets increasingly sad if you can't let it go.
Well, where anything's in a big up. Well done, Rick Emerson.
Yay.
Okay, awesome. So the piece on Red Fang comes out, when is that going to be?
That'll be sometime probably around the 12th. Get together with them when they're here in town and finish up the interviews for that and stuff. We had a story today about the Baseball Project and their record. They've got an April 9th show coming up here. They're playing spring training right now.
You can read it in the Oregonian or online at oregonlive.com/music and so forth. We want to thank our guests today, including Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, also Aaron Geek in the city, Duran, and so forth. We want to thank, by the way, a couple of things. We want to thank Cheryl for remembering to put that live link up to KPAM this morning, because I forgot to do that. So, yes, so the answer is that'll be up Tuesday and Wednesday as well. Dawn Taylor and I are going to be filling in for Mr. Bob Miller and KPAM tomorrow and Wednesday. That is Tuesday and Wednesday, the 29th and the 30th on 860 KPAM from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Can I go home and sleep now?
No. Are you doing Ham-Fisted Radio on Wednesday?
Yeah.
Good for you. Well done. If you'd said no, I would have lost respect.
And I believe Scott Daly is going to be joining us, so he'll be on the show with us on Wednesday to just appreciate my wackiness.
Fantastic.
At the end of the day there.
The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening, and keep spreading the word, if you will, please. Never goes unappreciated. It is Monday, March 28th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.